Gremlin Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Gremlin Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
From the high mountains of Appalachia, beautiful, sunny land of the sky, Asheville, North Carolina, this is your weekly one-stop shop for the strange and the unusual. I'm Micah Hanks, and you've locked in. It is the Gremlin Report. Welcome to another week of strangeness from right here in the heart of the Dark Hills of the Appalachians. I'm your host, Micah Hanks. Joining me in studio, as always, is our fantastic producer, Mr. Chris Hayes. Chris Hayes, how are you?
I am phenomenal. How are you? I could use a little bit more volume.
Phenomenal's good. Yes, we'll get that all worked out. Boy, I tell you, you know, we've had to set things up in this studio so strangely this evening. I'll tell you more about that later. No, Hadels didn't attack this time. We're okay. We wouldn't want our fantastic listenership out there worrying about us. And also, of course, our engineer, Mr. Matt Oakley, back there on the Master Console here at Gremlin International Headquarters. Matt, how are you?
I'll just be phenomenal. Chris was phenomenal. I'll be phenomenal.
Okay, be phenomenal. That's fantastic. And I hope
you're good
at
it.
Yes, you certainly are. Well, you, my dear listeners, I hope you're all doing well out there as well. Lovelies in Radioland who are joining us here on the program. Speaking of joining us here on the program, tonight we will be joined by one of our fantastic field correspondents, Mr. Dakota Smokey Waddell, who will be sharing some information about alien big cats that he's been delving into recently. He's been doing a lot of field work. And that's what our field correspondents on this program do, is they get involved in field work where they can get themselves out in the field and study strange phenomena firsthand, learn what they can about it, and then bring back their reports of strange and unusual happenings so that you can learn about them here on the Gremlin Report. We'll also be joined later in the program tonight by another field correspondent of the Gremlin Report, someone I'm very glad to actually have as a field correspondent. And he's, of course, you know, a multifaceted individual in terms of his interests and his expertise. Nick Redfern, author of the book The Real Men in Black, will be giving us not only an update on the Men in Black, but he'll also be giving us some updates about crypto news and things like that. All kinds of interesting stuff because, well, again, you know, Nick Redfern's pretty much an expert on all there is to know when it comes to strange phenomena. And I thought it would be great to get him on the program because, yes, we are, ladies and gentlemen, celebrating the fantastic month that only comes around once a year, Croctober, here on the Gremlin Report. Croctober, our favorite month here on the program. And so we're going to try and line up as many creepy, strange guests. You know, I mean, I tell you, we do get pretty serious. Okay, well, let's just be honest. I actually have a tendency to get really, really, really dark and really brooding and serious about things that I talk about here on the program. And so I think it's nice from time to time to back off a little bit, not take everything quite so seriously, and ponder the philosophical meaning behind every perceivable element of our existence, which I do tend so often to do, and to allow ourselves to have a little fun every now and then, from time to time. That's what we're going to be doing during the month of October. That's why we call it Croctober around here on the Gremlin Report. We're going to hope to get Tim Beckley on the program, Mr. UFO, a.k.a. Mr. Creepo. He's known by many names. I'm proud to call him Brother, like so many others, and a few other guests. So we'll let you know more about that in the coming weeks. Producer Chris Hayes will be getting to work on that and finding all kinds of fantastic guests who will blow your mind and keep you up at night with the creepiness they bring here during this fantastic month leading up to Halloween. Happens to be a favorite holiday of ours here on the Gremlin Report. And well, I don't see why it wouldn't be anybody's favorite holiday. But then again, you know, there's some folks out there who don't like the creepy stuff. It's just a little too weird for them.
And it gives Chris a chance to play with his makeup.
That's right. Yeah, Chris, you know, that's something that a lot of people don't know about you, Chris, is that you are a special effects master. You really are probably, I think master is just the best word that comes to mind, you know.
I wouldn't call myself a master by any means, but I'm really good at putting blood on things and blowing stuff up, so.
I remember you guys were working on a film one time.
I had my name removed from that farce.
Yes,
that farce.
That was.
Although
God
I didn't
awful.
Walk away unscathed, I'm covered in scars from mishaps, from squibs and breakaway tables.
That's what I was going to talk about. Is I remember every night there for a couple weeks, you're like, "Yeah, we're going to be blowing up some squibs tonight," and I kept thinking you were saying squids. You're blowing up squids. Why do you blow up squids?
Oh no, I blow those up too. I hate
The best thing ever, though, was that first breakaway table test we did. Is that video still out there, Chris?
Probably. I'll look for it, and if I can find it, I'll link it to the Grey Lantern Report.
It would be so great, because, guys, it is hilarious.
I think our listenership deserves to be able to see you destroying a table by leaping through it. Is that correct?
You mean a table destroying me?
Well, you know, I mean, some would say that the table was destroyed. I know for a fact that you're still here and alive. You know, one of our listeners wrote the other day and said, you know, Micah, I think it would be hilarious during the month of Croctober, since you're going to be trying to do creepy stuff. I think you need to try and get how did they put it? They said that we needed to try and get a zombie, I guess, on the program for an interview. And he said you need to have him on the telephone and everything and ask him questions about, what he thinks about the financial crisis and all this kind of stuff.
That's kind of unnecessary, really.
And then he'll just go.
Well, see, that's the thing. Yeah, exactly. And I said, well, it's kind of unnecessary for us to have to try and worry about getting a zombie on the program. And the reason being is that we have a zombie right here in the studio with us, Chris Hayes. This guy is bona fide. He is a real live dead one. He has actually experienced a near-death experience and came back from it after being pronounced clinically dead. Is that correct? You were pronounced actually clinically dead.
Clinically dead for 3 minutes.
Yes, indeed. And so here you are. You managed to survive the ordeal, and we have you here with us in the studio. So we're always proud every week to bring you live news from beyond the fringe. And part of what helps us with that is, a real live zombie here in the studio. So, yeah, it'd be great to have a zombie on the program for Croctober. But you know what? We've already got a zombie that's on the program each week. So, again, you know, broadcasting from the depths of the Hollow Earth like we do, from a bunker. People think I'm kidding when I say that we're broadcasting from a bunker. But there are acoustic anomalies that only occur at this depth under the earth. And therefore, that's why we specially designed this studio. Literally, miles and miles and miles, perhaps hundreds of miles below the earth's surface, so that we could provide this unique acoustic environment. Now, sometimes it gets a little echoey down here in the cave, and one of our listeners wrote in, actually, it's one of our field correspondents, Mike Reese, mentioned that he heard a lot of reverb. So hopefully the echoing throughout the halls of the MOHO down here in Graylian International Headquarters, the bunker below Graylian International Headquarters, hopefully things aren't too echoey. If we have audio problems, we'll hopefully get those worked out here in just a second. So, but anyway, that said, we're going to move right on to some news, and then during the next segment, we're also going to be joined here live by phone by our field correspondent who handles matters of cryptozoology. That's Dakota Waddell. He's going to be discussing alien big cats with us. But first, before we get to all that, some of the news from this week. You know, I subscribe to a lot of magazines. I also write for a lot of magazines. Listeners of this program know that I write for UFO and Intrepid magazine. If you haven't subscribed to one or both of those yet, you need to. But I also subscribe to Wired magazine. That's a magazine I've enjoyed reading for years. I picked up a copy for the first time years ago when I was catching a plane out to Montana, and I read the entire thing during the flight there and back. And ever since, I've been a subscriber, and there was a really interesting article in this month's issue, Inside the Russian Shortwave Radio Enigma. And it's talking about a strange shortwave station that broadcasts in Russia. It's been there for years. It's called UVB-76. And this particular station broadcasts just little beeps and dashes, little sounds all day. Occasionally, you'll hear what sounds like a microphone come on and someone moving around a room of, you know, some kind of creepy rattling noises and things like that. Maybe you'll even hear a human voice and a person will begin reading names, Anna, Nikolai, Ivan, Tatanya, Roman, in sequence like that. But little is known otherwise in terms of what is actually causing this strange, or not what causes it, but what maybe their, how do you word this, what the purpose is behind this strange shortwave station. From a lonely, rusted tower in a forest north of Moscow, it's a mysterious shortwave radio station transmitting day and night for at least the last decade, leading up to 1992. It broadcast almost nothing but beeps. After that, it switched to buzzes, generally between 21 and 34 per minute, each lasting roughly only a second. A nasally foghorn blaring through a crackly ether. The signal was said to emanate from the grounds of the Voyene Gorodok, which is a mini-military city near the village of Povarovov. I can never pronounce this. I'm sorry. The syllable, the accent is on the second syllable. We'll try again here. Povarovo. P- Povarovo, I believe that's it. And very rare, perhaps once only every few weeks or so, the monotony was actually broken by this male voice that would come on and read these names. But the balance of the airtime was filled by a steady, almost maddening series of inexplicable tones. Now, people were fascinated by this for years. Nobody knew exactly what or why this broadcast occurred and what they were trying to get across. Probably some sort of code, probably some sort of government operation and some sort of code given out, the names representative of something else. On June 5th, 2010, however, this strange buzzing that the station was so well known for eventually ceased. There were no announcements, no explanations, just silence. And then the following day, the broadcast resumed as if, well, nothing had ever happened. For the rest of June and July during the year 2010, UVB-76, which the station was known as, behaved more or less as it always had. There were some short-lived perturbations, including bits of what sound like Morse code, you know, those little beeps that you hear sometimes late at night on the AM stations, but nothing dramatic. In mid-August, the buzzing stopped again. It resumed, stopping again, and then starting again. And then finally, on August 25th, at 10:13 a.m., you can tell that the people who followed this shortwave broadcast really kept down to the minute record of what was going on. At 10:13 a.m. on August 25th, UBV-76 went entirely haywire. First there was silence, and then a series of knocks and shuffles that made it sound like someone was there in a room in a broadcast facility. Before this day, all the beeping, buzzing codes and numbers had hinted at an evil force hovering on the airwaves, some said. Now it seemed as though the wizard were suddenly about to reveal himself. For the first week of September, transmission was interrupted frequently, usually with what sounded like recorded snippets of Dance of the Little Swans from Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake. On the evening of September 7th, something even more dramatic, one listener called it even existential, transpired. At exactly 8:48 p.m. Moscow time, a male voice issued a new call sign, Mikhail Dmitry Zenya Boris, indicating that the station was now to be called MDZ, lowercase h, capital B. This was followed by one of the station, formerly known as UVB-76's typical nebulous messages, a sequence of numbers followed by letters 04979-DRENDOUT, Drendout, followed by a longer series of numbers, and then TRENERSKIY, and yet more numbers. People have been fascinated by this thing for years. It's incredibly interesting. There was one man who actually gathered the shortwave signal, fed it to a stream, just like we're broadcasting to you right now, live via the internet, and put it on a website so that people could log onto the web and listen to this enigmatic series of bumps and beeps and dashes and occasional interruptions by a human voice on the other side. It's very interesting. That's Wired Magazine this month. You can read more about UVB-76. I think there's a rock group that actually borrowed that for their name a few years ago. That's in Wired right now. We'll include that in the show notes for tonight's program as well. And speaking of strange dispatches, maybe those of the otherworldly variety, well, one famous alien has recently said goodbye to some of his fans. Yes, that's right, Leonard Nimoy recently said goodbye to Star Trek fans. I think the website was the Entertainment Gatherer, which reported that Nimoy, before a group of fans at a convention last week, gave a speech in which he closed with his signature Spock catchphrase, "Live long and prosper." The occasion was the 45th annual Star Trek convention held over the weekend in Chicago. Leonard Nimoy was one of the first of the series regulars to attend these gatherings shortly after the series was canceled. He's made appearances regularly over the last four decades. Can you imagine that? Imagine not only it was so much a part of his own life, but the lives of those who had, of course, you know, grown up watching him and, well, had gotten to know him over the years attending conferences like this. And it was much to the delight of the impassioned admirers of the show and its philosophical, futuristic underpinnings. William Shatner, the actor made famous by playing Captain Kirk in the series, has a reputation for ridiculing these sorts of events, but Nimoy saw early on the value of their existence. Hence, over the years, Mr. Spock has vied for the fans' affection and allegiance and may have actually surpassed his castmate for the top spot in the hearts and minds of devoted Trekkers all over the world with his famous "Live long and prosper," and he holds up his hands, you know, in the Vulcan greeting.
I think we need some commentary from a true Trekkie that we have in the studio.
In addition,
Chris, what do you have to say?
Yes, in addition to being a zombie, Chris Hayes is apparently an actual Trekkie, is that correct?
I don't know when I got this moniker, but
nah, you love Star Trek.
Yeah, I do think Captain Kirk is the far superior captain because while he drank Romulan ale, Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise only drank Synthahol.
I know, really. Well, come on, guys. That's like drinking
O'Doul's.
Yeah, I know.
We don't need to know that much
Captain
information.
Captain Kirk got all the ladies. Captain Kirk got a lady every episode. Who got the lady every episode in Star Trek The Next Generation? The First Lieutenant, William Riker.
And I mean, honestly, do you think Jean-Luc Picard could have handled trouble with Tribbles?
He would have just spoken broken French at it.
Yeah, I mean, he couldn't have taken it.
Well, probably not.
Well, anyway, the now 80-year-old Nimoy gave a lengthy speech to those at the convention, which was filled with wistful remembrance and peppered by the kind of cosmic utterances one would expect from Spock himself. And the end result was a satisfying homage to his fans for keeping the legend of Star Trek alive through the dark years before the franchise made a spectacular comeback in claiming, arguably, the zenith of sci-fi fan devotion. Yeah, Leonard is getting a little older. You know, I know that he's also pursuing other interests. I know Leonard Nimoy, much like Chris Hayes here, has taken an interest in art photography. You know, he's got a lot of beautiful nude models that'll cover themselves in stuff like sand and oil and paint and things like that and pose for him. And I guess when you've been Spock and you've had, you know, admiring fans like that for, you know, years and years and years, that gives you pretty much artistic license to do whatever you want to. Well, almost anything you want to. And I guess maybe that also includes saying, live long and prosper. And then, well, bowing out, because apparently that's what he's doing, at least from some of these convention circuits. And, you know, he's 80 years old. I guess that's kind of expected, isn't it? Before we go to the break, we'll try and cram one more news story in here also. You know, for years people have been talking now about the mysterious deaths and disappearances of honeybees. Have you seen this? Honeybees dying and disappearing. This is very strange.
Not at your
place.
Yeah,
I've heard about it.
Yeah. Honeybee carcasses coated the ground. This is a story that appeared at the British Daily Mail online. Honeybee carcasses coated the ground around hundreds of Florida beehives after a mysterious massacre claimed millions of bees and mutilated a way of life for local beekeepers. They got a photograph of a local beekeeper, and he's literally standing there, and he's got his hands cupped together like this, and he's holding literally a pile of dead honeybees in his hands. Now, there have been a lot of theories as to what might be causing this. One idea is, I think cell phone towers and Wi-Fi. You know, there are even people who claim that Wi-Fi internet really drives them crazy and that they have to go live in little communes back up in the hills. Have you heard this? We talked about it on the program before. And the disturbing thought that animals who utilize homing or honing abilities, rather, directional senses for their transportation and way of life, the thought that some of these animals could be affected adversely by the presence of cell phone towers, Wi-Fi internet, and a variety of other different kinds of things in our modern technological world, it's truly disturbing. No one can tell yet what killed as many as 12 million bees from 800 hives this week in Brevard County on central Florida's Atlantic coast. The massive bee die-off has stung Charles Smith, whose Smith Family Honey Company lost $150,000 worth of bees. I'm a pretty tough guy, but it is heart-wrenching, he told News 13 in Orlando. Not only is it a monetary loss here, but we work really hard on these bees, trying to keep them in good health. Smith scooped up handfuls of the dead bees that littered the ground around his hives. The bees he raises go to farmers around the country to pollinate numerous crops. The bee deaths show the telltale signs of pesticide poisoning, in this instance, experts said. State officials are testing dead bees to determine exactly what might have killed them. The Brevard County Sheriff's Office is investigating the deaths, which spanned 30 sites in a mile-and-a-half radius, as a possible crime. The fact that it was so widespread and so rapid, I think you can pretty much rule out disease, said Bill Kern, a University of Florida entomologist who told Florida Today his thoughts on this strange and unsettling circumstance. It happened essentially almost in one day alone. Usually diseases affect adults or the brood. You don't have something that kills them both. So what could get in there and cause what they've called quote-unquote colony collapse disorder like this? You know, there are a number of theories that abound, and of course we've named a few. Authorities in this instance think that pesticide or something like that may be the case. Are things that we're using on our foods or other things that we are using in our environment for communication and relaying information in the modern technological world affecting adversely natural animals? I've heard a lot of people say in the past that if we lose the honeybees, well, we lose everything. Because this species specifically can be credited with the pollination of our crops. And, of course, due to their presence and their ability to pollinate, you know, by gathering food the way that they do, this allows for plant species to produce the food that we eat. And not just the food that we eat, but also the food that is fed to different kinds of species of animal that we, also consume, you know, cattle and chickens and things like that, livestock. So in the absence of honeybees, where do humans go? Where do all different kinds of life on planet Earth go? Many say, well, we would engineer different ways. Life, as they say, to quote Dr. Ian Malcolm from Jurassic Park, life does find a way. But are we really ready to let go of life as we know it in the event that honeybees or any other species so integral to our survival as a species disappears inexplicably and suddenly? It's a very terrifying thought. And yet there are many species already believed to have disappeared out there already. I mean, just think about, for instance, you know, here in the United States, in ancient times, of course, we had mammoths and things like that. But right here in Western North Carolina, where we broadcast from, it was once a common occurrence, you know, to see mountain lions in the area. Now they say that there are none. None actually exist any longer here in the Western North Carolina mountains. At least that's the conventional thought on the matter, because according to a few people, there are indeed sightings, not just here in Western North Carolina, but all around the country that involve what are called alien big cats. Alien big cats because they are believed to either be extinct or out of place altogether and yet seen nonetheless. Now, one of our field correspondents here on this program, Dakota Waddell, has been doing some investigation into reports of alien big cats right here in the Western North Carolina area. Now, we have a global audience, and I want to point out real quick to you that the reason that we are featuring a rather local-oriented program, or rather a story on this program, is because when an animal believed to be extinct can appear nonetheless, and there are reports of their actual physical existence in a locale long after they are believed to be extinct. Keep in mind, this same sort of thing happened around the beginning of the 20th century off the coast of Africa with a particular fish, a very scaly, strange-looking fish known as the coelacanth. It was believed to have been extinct for, well, thousands and thousands of years. And yes, indeed, they found one living off the coast of Africa. They found several since then. Living fossils, they call them. There are a lot of things that might exist out there that are believed to be extinct or believed to represent relic species, but probably just too few of them, or maybe just too little interest in their potential existence for there to be any credibility to such stories. Bigfoot, Loch Ness monsters, God knows what. This is the problem that we face with cryptozoology in general. Now, I don't know if these things actually exist or not. I'm not the one who's here to try and tell you that, but I'll tell you what, our field correspondent Dakota Waddell, who will join us right after this, does think he has some answers regarding whether or not these things might still be present here in the mountains of Western North Carolina. Who knows what else might be present out there where you are. I'm Micah Hanks, joined in studio by Chris Hayes and Matt Oakley, and this is the Graylian Report, your weekly one-stop shop for the strange and unusual. More on alien big cats and crypto news when we come back right after this. Stay tuned.
Carl Sagan once wrote that the questioning mind needs to be instilled with both skepticism and wonder, for the universe is a pretty big place, filled with undelved mysteries, sciences, and life that we've barely begun to comprehend. Every month, Intrepid Magazine brings you both the wondrous and the skeptical. Intrepid Magazine focuses on science, metaphysics, UFOs, politics, conspiracies, and unexplained phenomena, all offered up by Intrepid's cadre of writers and contributors, comprised of a host of seasoned authors, pundits, and recognized names in their fields. The universe is indeed a big place, and where other magazines leave off, Intrepid Mag is just beginning. Subscribe to Intrepid Magazine today at www.intrepidmag.com. That's www.intrepidmag.com. IntrepidMag.com.
Broadcasting over the airwaves, your light in the darkness. I'm Micah Hanks, and this, my friends, is the Gray Alien Report. Still working out all our technical kinks. You know, I think we finally got rid of the Hadals down here in the studio. And now we are faced with a new kind of danger, a ravenous threat unlike any that we have ever had to contend with. Fire imps have made their way into the master console here at Gray Alien International Headquarters. And people out there live on the air are saying that they're hearing all kinds of strange things. They've heard grumbling, moaning, screaming. They've heard during the commercial break, when there should be no way possible for anyone to be able to hear our voices coming over the airwaves. And I'm telling you right now, here's the thing. Not only has Matt Oakley got a huge master console back there, I've also got a secondary board that I can use as a kill switch right over here to my left. Everything was potted down, and yet somehow our stream was carrying audio, not only from Chris and myself and from Matt Oakley, but some people out there. I got an email from someone, a fast blast during the break, and this individual said, "You're not going to believe what I heard." They said that they heard what sounded like garbled foreign language, okay, coming through our stream as though there was someone sitting right here talking with us in a different language. And I said, "Are you sure that?" Because some people thought that they were able to hear our voices during the break. They said, No. This was not one of you guys. This was not Micah, Matt, or Chris. This was indeed a strange, deep voice in a foreign language. Now, I don't know what the hell people are hearing out there.
Well, I guess the cat's out of the bag. You got it. Our guest for this next hour is Cthulhu.
I wish that we had a guest as devious and terrifying as Cthulhu, but that would probably be terrifying not only for our listeners, but for me as well. And therefore, Matt, I'm sorry. Wait, Matt,
you guys realize what this means, though, right? Somebody has put bad goofer on us.
Oh, you guys shouldn't have ever talked about voodoo last week.
And it's because I think it's because I emailed Dr. Snake, Doctor with a K. He's upset that he spells his name wrong.
Well, I hope he's not upset, because, you know, the thing is we'd like to seriously have him on the program to help us celebrate Croctober. And we couldn't get him tonight, but you know what we've been telling you since last week that we were going to have Dakota Waddell, our crypto field correspondent, on the program tonight to chat with us a little bit about alien big cats. I think that's a plenty creepy enough subject to talk about during the month of Croctober. Dakota, are you with us?
Sir, I am here and happy to be here. How goes it?
Well, we are happy to have you as always. It's always fantastic to have you back on the program. You know, you're a real wild one. Sorry.
But before we get too far, did I hear you just saying you were talking about voodoo or something like that? Because you know you don't do that.
No, I know. We're learning. Okay, Matt.
Baron Samedi is going to wake you up in your dreams with his painted-off skull face, and he's going to throw you off the train like he tried to do with the James Bond man. Don't do that.
You know, I try to be
cut that crap out real quick.
I try to be the living embodiment of James Bond, but, you know, it just doesn't ever work out too well for me. I tell you, it puts a smile on my face, as always, to have you on the program, Dakota. Now, as a matter of fact, there was a story linked to Cryptomundo.com, you know, where our friend Lauren Coleman and Craig Woolheater and some of the others delve into crypto news each week. It did deal with alien big cats. I tried to open the link, and I got the 404 error not found story, but that's okay, because, you know, I think that you've got some live field reporting to give to us regarding your own research recently into the alien big cat phenomenon. It's something that has occurred not just here in Western North Carolina, but all around the country, and a lot of people aren't aware of the fact that there are what appear to be valid reports of sightings of mountain lions and other large cats, even black panthers and the like, seen out there. So tell us a little bit about your research and what you've been looking into lately.
Well, you know, I kind of got curious about it. You know, I grew up in the South Omni Valley down to the base of the Pisgah Ridge, and you'll go up Highway 151, takes you all the way up to Blue Ridge Parkway. So I'm riding nestled in the mountains. And, you know, I've always grown up hearing stories of people saying they've heard or seen or sighted. And, you know, I've always known that bobcats live up here, so, you know, figured it could have been that. Mm-hmm. You know, and honestly, to share a funny story about a quote-unquote alien cat, when I was growing up, my grandpa, my nanny and my poppy lived up at the end of Highway 151 near Mount Pisgah. When I was growing up, my grandpa used to tell me not to go down the hill behind their house, because if I went down there, there was a creature that he claimed lived down there that he called the Wampus Cat.
Mm.
I went down there, the Wampus Cat would get me, and I'd never get back it. And if I did get back, he would eat all my fingers off before I got back.
Oh, that's just terrible. And being a bass player in, you know, in a band. In fact, you and I, have just about every band we've played in for the last 10 years or so, we've played in together. That would have been terrible if you'd had your fingers eaten off at an early age, you know?
Well, it turns out, I find out years and years later, obviously, that, you know, he may have made the story up. He may not have, I don't know, but... Yeah, the reason he didn't want me to go down there because there was quicksand and copperheads and snakes and all kinds of creepy crawlies that children do not do. Well, not even children. You know, you don't really need to mess with snakes if you're grown up either.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah, Dakota,
yeah,
you don't
well,
need
you
to
know,
mess
I,
with
I
snakes.
I kind of got to thinking about some of these things, and I've just heard too many things lately. And what really piqued my interest about researching and trying to follow up on some of these eyewitness stories, the of actually seeing a creature, hearing something in the woods, chickens or livestock or something disappearing, finding deer carcasses in the woods, is the fact that earlier this year, and this is official, mm-hmm. that the North Carolina Wildlife Resource Commission came out and said that the mountain lions or cougars or whatever you know the many names that they're called by, that are native to the Appalachian region of North Carolina, are officially extinct. So that means there are no more.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of got to thinking about, well, if they say there aren't anymore, why did I keep hearing story after story after story? I got really curious one night, got on of all the silly places to do this. I knew I could reach a lot of people. I just put up a post on Facebook that asked if anybody had stories that they'd be willing to tell me, people that they knew that I could get in touch with. And within, I would say, half an hour, I had something like somewhere between 15 and 20 replies of,
wow.
Oh, my grandpa supposedly hears this, I saw this, I know a fellow that lives in such and such place, and all of which, about 75% of all those posts that I got were somewhere that were within about 5 to 10 miles of where I grew up.
Hmm.
So, you know, I just kind of got to thinking about that and just researching why. I didn't even really get into, I haven't delved into the stories as much. That'll be a subject for a different night, possibly. But I wanted to try to look at why North Carolina Wildlife Resource Commission would say that they're extinct if they get all of these reports.
And they've been pretty firm in that, right? They have told you, I mean, I know that you contacted a number of officials.
Yes, they are very, very firm, and they are extinct. They are no more. These cats are dead. They are not stunned. They are dead. So, you know, and there was actually a guy that I sent out an email to. I don't have it in front of me. I kind of got caught off guard. I was going to try to get stuff together, and don't have my laptop with me. But he's a biologist who works for a state in North Carolina. His last name's Howard,
mm-hmm.
and he sent me a PDF file that was that basically was a frequently asked questions kind of memorandum for people who actually inquire. And my question to him was, you know, do we have any databases for sightings, reportings, any sort of empirical evidence, anything? And they continue to stay firm by the fact that they are extinct. It's kind of like they dismiss the whole thing, but they give several fairly good reasonings why they keep saying that they're extinct.
Mm-hmm. What are some of those reasons?
Well, one of the reasons is that...
Sorry, are you being attacked? Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm actually being attacked right now.
hey, that's live radio, folks. Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, live radio. The dogs. I'm actually being attacked by a lycanthropus right now.
Oh.
I knew I should. It's a moonful night. Anyway, getting back to the subject at hand.
Yes.
One of the reasons that they had given me is apparently what has happened over the past decade or so is it's the taxonomical reclassification of a lot of species because of unknown numbers or uncountable numbers or a blending of species that, you know, they were two separate species, now they're one species, that the native Appalachian mountain lion, that subspecies of the cougar family,
mm-hmm.
that is extinct. So what they're saying is any of the sightings that are happening now are they've moved here from somewhere else, say from the Midwest, from from Texas, as far away as Texas or something like that, or that they have been reintroduced by a private individual, which is not unheard of in the mountains. That's exactly how the wild Eurasian boars ended up in western North Carolina, is they were imported from the Eurasian Plateau, brought to this the western North Carolina area, and released into now defunct private game lands. And so that's why you see wild boar species, which are not native to western North Carolina. So basically what they're saying is, if they're here, that means that either they've moved here or somebody caught one or two or however many number and just released them here.
They don't say it's impossible then for there to be large cats in this area or presumably other areas if these things, however they got into any given locale, if they're able to move here from someplace or someone's released, and there is still a possibility that there are explanations as to why they would be here and that the possibility exists that they could actually exist in such an environment.
That's in a roundabout way. That's the thing. I never could get a concrete answer. And I've thought to myself very deeply and talked to a couple of other friends of mine. My friend Roger Rector, who I've known for a long time, used to be a volunteer and worked for the herpetology department for the North Carolina Wildlife Resource Commission. And me and him have sat around and kind of woodshopped some ideas. And it's getting this concrete answer of why. And here is my reasoning behind, or why I think that they continue to firmly have this such firm stance against or claiming that they're extinct, are really kind of based on economics.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that, what I mean by that is, if you say that, I don't know, if the dodo bird was considered by the government to be extinct.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you don't have to funnel money into it for a conservation program.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The other reason I think, especially with mountain lions, is the fact that maybe that if you look at the general public and what their thoughts are on mountain lions, you know, they're not going to think what an interesting species to look at. Oh, wow, we have mountain lions here. How cool is that? You're funding conservation of an apex predator, of an animal that will actually attack you and has been known to attack people throughout history. Especially, there's hundreds of stories you can find from trappers and other adventurers during westward expansion during the 1800s of having to either fight off the grizzly bears or have to fight off the cougars. They're all over the place. So, and there's still a large population of mountain lions in the western part of the United States, Texas, the Rocky Mountains, and so forth.
Yeah, a little more common out there, huh?
Right. So, but here's the other thing I found interesting is they keep this stance that there are none in the Appalachian. And if you look at the classification system that they're trying to use again, they've basically taken all the mountain lions, cougars, there's many names for them, but it's all, basically what you think of as a mountain lion.
Mm-hmm.
And they've kind of lumped them into one North American category, except the Florida panther.
Okay.
But, so, there's part of me that kind of thinks, well, if you claim the others are extinct, that just helps out with the conservation and the money that it's funded into the very, very endangered Florida panther species. So the Florida panther is the only accepted big cat on the East Coast.
The Florida panther. You know, that's interesting that you say that. And I'm, of course, leave it to me to bring a really strange reason as to why to the table, but I'm going to do it anyway. I think that's what I'm best known for, right? Bigfoot.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
We wouldn't have it any other way. Hopefully the listeners feel the same. You know me better. But the Bigfoot thing, for years people have been saying, Lauren Coleman, one of them, that in parts of Florida that there is a creature that is similar to a Bigfoot that is nonetheless more ape-like. It walks upright most of the time, but if it's startled or people come up on it in the wild, this thing breaks into a run on all fours. Whereas the, what are called the true giants, that Mark A. Hall and Lauren Coleman wrote about in their book, the Anomalous Books put out just last year, the true giants, and some of these other creatures are far more human you know, in appearance, and some of them much, much larger than these little skunk ape creatures as they're referred to in the Southeast. In other words, there's a general idea that there might be a variety of different creatures that are being seen throughout the remote wilds of the United States, and that nonetheless, rather than trying to differentiate based on eyewitness reports whether we are dealing with multiple, you know, varieties of species that are similar to humans but not quite us, okay, there are a lot of people who have actually said in the scientific academia that if Bigfoot is to ever be taken seriously, we have to recognize it first as one single species because we have no proof of their existence, conclusive proof at least. And until we have that conclusive proof, we can't treat Bigfoot like a variety of different things and a, you know, a multitude of different species until one is proven to exist. So although I see the pros and cons of both sides, if indeed we're dealing with a variety of different animals and their behavior could be different, couldn't we stand to learn by accepting that at least as a possibility? And I see sort of what you're talking about with the mountain lions. You know, there's one that's generally accepted to possibly exist, but nonetheless, there are these reports of different kinds of animals. You know, what some have called melanistic mountain lions, because by all accounts, there shouldn't be black panthers, but people say that they see big cats that have black fur.
Right, and, you know, and since you went ahead and brought it up, it's, you know, thinking about the idea of a subspecies of a different, of a mountain lion, is the stories that you hear about people sighting black panthers, and this has happened all over the place. I've actually got a couple of stories I'm going to share people I'll leave one anonymous. I'll tell you who the other one is, and you've probably heard the story before,
mm-hmm.
is my dad.
Oh, yeah.
You know, dad's always been, you know, a truck driver of some sort. He either had a dump truck, he did long hauls, you know, drove a semi. But he told me a story one time, and he said this was probably mid to late 80s. He was in eastern part of Kentucky, and he said it was very late at night. He was going down the road, and I asked him, I was like, well, were you tired? Had you taken a break? Had you slept for a while? He's like, oh, yeah. He's like, this is right after I stopped at a truck stop. You know, I'd slept for, you know, 6 or 7 hours, something like that. He's like, yeah, I had coffee, I was refreshed. He's like, so it was very late at night, but I don't feel like I was, he's like, I definitely don't think I was seeing anything, or, you know, my mind created it from tiredness. But he says he was going down the road, and it wasn't an interstate, so it was a state road, so he wasn't going real fast. And he said probably somewhere between 50 and 100 feet in front of him, he saw a large black cat step out in front of the road and walk directly in front of his truck and go into the woods. So from basically one side of the road to the other, so you're figuring, you know, a standard two-lane road, you've got 10, 12 feet walked across, and he said he stopped and got his flashlight out, looked in the woods, and there was no trace of it. And he said that stuck with him until today.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've heard that story, yeah. I remember him talking about that, you know, And there's something creepy about big cats like that wandering around, even though, I mean, we know that, you know, even today in parts of the world, in parts of this country, they still exist. I mean, when you see, we're used to seeing house cats. You know, we have a studio cat here at the Graylian Report, Nikki, my personal assistant.
And I mean, even out in the woods, man, if you ever see a bobcat, you know, bobcats are much bigger than, you know, your standard house cat. You're looking at a big one's 20, 25 pounds.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, that animal alone is enough to make you, you know, it provides cause for pause. And then when you think about these reports of, I mean, literally an animal, a cat, big enough to take out any dog, okay, and to take out, you know, a lot of the bovine species as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, these things are big. And when people see these, which inevitably they apparently are seeing them, then that you know, again, that can leave a very lasting effect. It's downright creepy. And, you know, I remember your father years ago telling me that story and hearing that and thinking, you know, God, what really is out there?
Yeah, and see, and, you know, if you look at read through some of the sightings that people have had, you know, you're looking at an average nose to tail tip length that people are talking about of 7 to 9 feet. So,
oh, man. That's a big cat.
Yeah, I think some of that, you know, it's kind of like a lot of other creature sightings. You know, 9 feet may be a little bit bigger when you're looking at the standard size of a mountain lion from the western part of the United States. So, mm-hmm. But still, I mean, even 5, 6 foot long, I mean, that that's not a house cat, man. That's not Nikki.
That's not a studio cat by any means. Well, Dakota Waddell, our field correspondent of crypto news and all related material, we appreciate you so much for bringing that to the report. And of course, you know, as your research continues, hopefully you'll jump back on in the coming weeks and share some more information about your ongoing investigation into this phenomenon with us. Okay.
Oh, definitely, man. It's always a pleasure, and thank you for having me on. Hope you guys have a great Croctober and celebrate it to the fullest. Find some good pumpkin ales, and think about the weird things. And hey, what better way to meet an alien if you can share an Oktoberfest with him?
Well, that's true. Although I would say this though, that I don't think we can really rightfully break out the pumpkin ales until you're able to make a visit over here to the bunker. I think we need to have a field correspondent night and have all the field correspondents, at least the ones that are near enough to make it to the bunker here at Grand.
Well, I'll have to wander down from the mountaintop compound of the cryptozoologist.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. The Appalachian Command. Smokey Waddell, thanks again for joining us here on the Grayling Report.
Cheers, fellas. Talk to you later.
Have a great night. Well, that's Dakota Waddell. You know, what if there are actually big cats like that out there? It's always caused me to wonder, you know, when you're out in the woods. I don't know where you might live. If you're listening to this program, you might live in the concrete jungle, the big city, so to speak. But, you know, wherever you are, this is just a reminder that there's a lot more out there than we often realize. We take for granted, in fact, some of the strange stuff that might be lurking just around the corner. When we come back, we'll delve more into weird news, space stuff, seeking that ever-loving moment of truth and insight that we hope to bring you, well, multiple times on every edition of this program. It is the Grayling Report. I'm Micah Hanks, and we'll be back right after this.
Skype ID, Grayling Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Grayling Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
It is me, your light in the darkness. And I have to tell you, it gets pretty dark down here in the dank corridors of the Moho. But that's okay, because we are trained professionals and we know how to handle the darkness, probably better than most, and that's why we are here, your creepy guides through the labyrinths of, well, human consciousness and strange phenomena. And we are taking your calls. If you'd like to join us by phone, you can reach the program this evening at 828-398-4886. No thanks to Engineer Matt Oakley putting the wrong telephone number up on Facebook.
Hey, let me fix that.
Yeah, I'll fix that there, Engineer Guy.
I'll get to it.
Yeah, it's 828-398-4886 to join us by phone. Or if you are a Skype user, you can reach the program at, get this, Skype ID Grayling Report. We're going to try and take a few calls during the program tonight, because we will have guests intermittently throughout the program. We might even have a few surprises tonight. I don't know. Let's see what happens. Nick Redfern, I can guarantee you, will be joining us during the final hour of tonight's broadcast with an update. You know, his latest book is The Real Men in Black. And I'll tell you, that is a very, very interesting book. Of course, he mentions me in the book because long ago, many moons ago, yes, I'm older than I look, that book was actually featured, or rather, I was actually mistaken for being an MIB, and my story is featured in that book. Now, how do you think someone like myself, yours truly, Micah Hanks, was mistaken for being an MIB?
You probably dressed in a suit and tried to convince people you were an MIB.
I didn't try to convince anybody I was an MIB, but I did wear a three-piece suit, black tie, white shirt, sunglasses, earpiece.
Did you have a black fedora?
I didn't wear a fedora. No.
Actually, have I told you about the really good movie that showcases Men in Black the way they're supposed to be and not like the silly alien hunting movies?
No, I haven't heard about this.
Oh, yeah, it's The Adjustment Bureau. It's really good. I recommend it to everyone.
The Adjustment Bureau. Okay, tell me about this.
It's about an adjustment bureau.
what do they do? What do they do and why are they like MIBs, though?
Well, basically, there's this one cosmic plan from which no one can deviate, and if they do deviate, the Adjustment Bureau has to set into motion little side plans to get everything back on track. And Matt Damon is the protagonist of the movie, and he's a high profile senatorial candidate who falls in love with a woman who he was not supposed to fall in love with. Mm-hmm. And so the Adjustment Bureau is trying their darndest to get everything back together, but through, you know, things that happen, magic and good old American ingenuity, Matt Damon makes his own destiny.
Huh, interesting. Doesn't sound really like these devious, maniacal, alien, you know, oriented human hunters, though, that we hear about that Nick Redfern writes about.
Well, I mean, that's a really short synopsis of a movie I saw 6 months ago. But I recommend everyone watch it. It's very good. Don't take my review of it, though. Well, like my description, it's not good.
I don't know. We trust your judgment pretty well. That's why you are, in fact, the producer here at the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks. We have been caught by the clock. When we come back next hour, we will be taking your phone calls, open lines, and discussing the strange news of the week here on the Graylian Report. I am Micah Hanks, joined in studio by producer Chris Hayes and the Reverend Matt Oakley, pushing all the right buttons back there on our center console. Stay tuned. Who knows what strange insights you may be able to garner from tonight's program.
Fact. This is the Graylian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
And welcome to Hour 2 of tonight's broadcast. I'm your humble mouth of the South, Micah Hanks, host of the Graylian Report, joined in studio by producer extraordinaire, Mr. Chris Hayes, and of course, pushing all the right buttons on the center console behind me, Mr. Matt Oakley. Matt Oakley is a movie star, and also we know him around here as the Reverend.
Yeah, I did appear in that one beer movie that one time.
Beer movie?
Yeah, that...
What the hell are you talking
what
about?
What was it, Beer Y'all?
Beer Y'all. Oh, you know, that was a film made by our good friends Will and Kurt Arledge of the famous band Rat Jackson. We took out last hour with a little of their music. What was the song we played? I think we played, was it Sexy Waitress we played?
Nah, it was something else.
Might have been Summer Hummer, I'm not sure, but anyway.
I think it was Summer Hummer.
Aren't they all such sexy waitresses?
Oh, gosh, they're all waitresses, yes, and they're
especially
all sexy.
Especially when they bring my biscuits and gravy.
We should be careful, though. You know, there's been a lot of political vitriol lately about such subjects, and frankly, I was a little concerned when our field correspondent during the last hour, Dakota Waddell, was talking about there being black panthers out there, you know, melanistic panthers. You get in trouble for that kind of talk these days. No, I'm kidding, but the truth of the matter is, that there is so much emphasis being laid on, and I try not to get too political on this program, but I'll say this. There's so much emphasis placed on the race card these days, especially in American politics, and yet, as a society, we try to say that we have moved beyond that, and that we are no longer beholden to attitudes, the old attitudes of yesterday, and the old racist sentimentalities, you know, of the old South, or anything else for that matter. And yet, look how often those, you know, that, well, I mean, it's a political strategy anymore. It's just sickening. It's terrible. And it's sad to me that in America today that we really can't be the bigger people and leave that aside. I mean, I'm not just talking about what, you know, Herman Cain, someone who I have tremendous respect for. I like Herman Cain quite a bit. It's not just his comments, you know, about Texas Governor Rick Perry, you know, and his visitation to a place that had a profane word on a rock, you know, when he was a young man visiting with his family on hunting retreats. It's not just The View and the people on The View. Barbara Walters saying the infamous word, that no one should say. And then, of course, you know, some of the African-American ladies on the program being offended by it. It's the fact that in today's society, it's still an issue. I know that we should move on. We should never forget, you know, the darker aspects of history, you know, the things that we are not so proud of, slavery, for instance. But we also, you know, in the world of today, okay, need to also recognize that slavery still occurs on planet Earth today in a variety of different forms. And if we are to rise above that kind of oppression against a person based on their social status or the color of their skin, you know, their sex or gender, you know, or anything like that, we have to rise above, and we have to meet every occasion with an opportunity to dismiss those aspects of ourselves that we don't want to be. We have the ability to choose right and wrong and what we want to be and what we don't want to be. And in America today, we like to think that we've moved beyond the race issue. It doesn't seem that we have, and it's very troubling for me. So, that said, I'll get off my political soapbox and say that maybe, you know, the enlightened listeners of this program know a little something about what I'm talking about and how we can put aside the petty differences, whether those be political, sociocultural, anything else. You know, move forward together in the spirit of inquiry and insight, you know, make this world a better place with ideas. I was talking with a friend the other day on a drive out of town. I travel a lot. And this friend of mine, I was talking to him about how weird I feel sometimes because I'm the kind of person who, I socially sometimes fall outside the comfortable boundaries of culture and status quo and things like that, and most often with my thought processes. You know, it's not how I dress or how I carry myself so much, you know. It's primarily the way that, the subjects I choose to address and the things I choose to talk about, you know, and the attitudes I have toward those subjects. There's a lot going on out there in the world these days. That sounds silly to say, honestly. I mean, there's a lot going on out there. Well, you know, okay, no duh. We know it, Micah Mouth of the South Hanks, but the truth is that with so much going on, with so many avenues and angles and interests available to us in America today, so much is relegated to petty bickering and silliness. I joke with people. In fact, my friend Melissa Church, the Aqua Kitten, I've talked with her about, at some point doing a radio program and calling it The Aqua Kitten and the Iceman, discussing the weather wherever you are, because you know what? Without the weather, most people wouldn't be able to have conversations. That's an old adage. It's kind of funny, but it's kind of the truth also. You know, here in America especially, and we have listeners all around the globe, I don't mean to generalize, but I know from living here in America that people in this country don't know how to talk to one another anymore. That's why I value so much when people who listen to this program do take time to call in or to write us or email us each week, and so many of you do, you know, with feedback, or you contact us on Facebook or on Twitter or anything else like that. I feel terrible because I don't have the time, being the busy individual that I am, to answer all the emails and answer all the Twitter updates and the Facebook posts and the phone calls and the emails, everything. You know, I don't have time to do all of it. I wish sometimes that I did, because it means so very much to me when people call into this program and they share their knowledge and their insights. It's people who think. It's people who think and people who are willing to be the outsiders from time to time, to set themselves aside from society and think in helpful, constructive, you know, useful ways, trying to innovate, trying to look at and unravel the mysteries of existence. Those are the people who move society forward. And talking with my friend driving to a performance out of town the other day, I was talking about how goofy I feel sometimes because I'm like, you know, literally it's difficult for me to walk into a bar and have a regular conversation with people anymore because I'm so enthralled with science and philosophy and politics and all these kinds of subjects. And he says, but that's not something to be unproud of, Micah, because you know what? It's people who are willing to tackle those thoughts independently as individuals or otherwise. Those are the ones who historically have always moved society forward. Now, I kind of chuckled. I'm like, you know, I don't know if I'm moving society forward, you know, with the Graylian Report or with whatever else, you know, writing articles for Mysterious Universe or any of these places that, you know, that I donate my time and my efforts to. But he said, no, you know, that's the thing is that, you know, you have to think outside the box. There aren't enough people today who think seriously about UFOs and that try really to wrap their head around that phenomena, that whatever they are, that tries really scientifically to understand them. You know, he said, you know what would be really cool is to do a program, a television program about UFO tech or something, where you look at UFO sightings and things and you try and apply modern science to them and understand how the hell these things work. You know, you don't see that on programs on television today. You don't see that on Ancient Aliens. You know, you don't see that on any of these shows. And I'm not, I don't mean to criticize those programs, but, you know, there's a lot of information that's thrown out there that could or could not be true. And there's very little being done to try and understand a real phenomenon that is right in front of our faces. You know, I'm best known these days, me, Micah Hangs, I'm best known as a ufologist, okay, a person who studies UFOs. You know, I grew up here in Western North Carolina, spending summer evenings around a campfire with my parents telling me stories about Bigfoot and things like that. UFOs were the least of my concerns and, frankly, not the thing that interested me the most. I see my engineer smirking back here because he probably knows the story about the Sasquatches on Bed Springs. You've heard this one, right?
Well, I have, but I wasn't listening to a word you were saying.
Oh,
so,
thank you. Well,
you know, hey, I wasn't smirking at you. I don't care what you have to say.
Our engineer is chatting with a girl right now.
Oh, chatting on the job. I should have known. Well, that's okay.
You know, nobody cares what I have to say. So,
It's not that no one cares what you have to say. It's that you don't ever speak into your mic.
Nope. It's the fact that I get to hear Micah go, and you see, people know me. People know me. Me,
you,
Micah Hanks.
Oh, me.
Oh, no.
As a ufologist.
Now, Matthew, you know Micah is the least of our friends who would be considered a glory
hog. He's the
hog.
Least of our friends.
No, he's the best of our friends.
Oh, that's true.
But
oh, good.
He is
I'm
not a glory hog by any means.
Well, I hope you don't think I'm a glory hog.
I'm also expecting a pay raise with that compliment.
Yes, you guys are getting pay raises, especially after that little chat we had on air last week. You know, you guys, no, truly, you know, but that's the thing. I am so thankful for you two. I am so thankful for the people who listen to this program. You know, people probably...
Not the band, though.
The you two?
Not the band.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
You know, I read a really strange news story today. One of our field correspondents who just got back in town from Canada, Chris McCollum, I caught up with Chris earlier today. He's actually in town for at least a few days, and God knows where he's going next. That guy travels all over the place, you know, providing commentary from all different, you know, the four corners of the globe to help us, you know, well, not just understand reality as we perceive it, but as others perceive it elsewhere. You know, hopefully at some point with the wonders of the World Wide Web, I hope that we will be able to take this program on the road and see the world and broadcast live to you from different parts of the world, different corners of the globe, bringing you knowledge and insight, not just from the Graylian bunker, a hole in the ground under the Appalachian Mountains full of cave goblins and critters. You know, I hope that we can actually travel to the east, you know, or to the west for that matter, and visit...
Like the Far East?
Yeah. I mean,
in the Midwest?
Take this country, no, not just the country, take the world by storm, take the program, take the Graylian Report completely global. How can you help us?
Now, listen, I guess that's the question.
I personally would like for us to go to Angkor Wat.
Can you guys put a lid on it? I'm talking. No, sorry.
No, I just love this idea of, like, we're here to provide great content for our listeners. We're here to, you know, entertain you week after week. But what can you do for us? Because that's what we're in it for, really. Right, Micah?
Well, I mean, what I mean by that is truly, you know, we are trying to. I was talking with Chris again, you know, Chris McCollum. It seems like all the guys I know named Chris who are involved with this program are the smartest people that I know, except for the one sitting right here next to me. Oh, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
To clarify, Chris is sitting beside him.
If you can see my face.
I can see your face right now. You crazy Irishman, you. But no, I I was talking with McCollum today, and he, you know, We were just catching up on all kinds of stuff because he's been on Prince Edward Island, you know, for the last several weeks and everything, and you know, and studying everything from economic policy to God knows what. You know, he is such a, you know, a unique individual, as all of our field correspondents are. We have a couple of new ones I want to mention here in a moment as well, but while we were talking today, you know. He, I don't know if I should even get into this. You know, this is one of those conversations sometimes I think that is just so meaningful, you know, on a friend-to-friend level that, well, it's not that our listenership wouldn't appreciate it. I know that they would, but, you know, we are all trying to affect change, basically. And at one point, I asked him, I said, what do you want in life, Chris? You know, you've been traveling a lot. You're going all over the world. What is it that you see when you go all over the place? You know, you've spent months at a time in Puerto Rico. You know, you go to Canada, you know, and you travel across, you know, the country and everything. You spent some time, you know, living it up in vineyards in Southern California last summer, you know. And I asked him, I said, you know, you travel a lot. More even than I do, really, in terms of, you know, the broad area that he covers. I said, what do you want in life? And he says, you know, obviously, you know, I want to be able to affect some sort of change around the world. And he said, well, what do you want, Micah? And I said, well, I want the same thing, you know, and I also want to, you know, eventually, whether or not it's in the cards right now, you know, I want to settle down, get married, I want to have a big family. And by the time I'm old, I don't want to have to worry so much about the things. I think I'll always worry about the things that we talk about on this program, but I'd love it if at some point in my life I don't have to be so preoccupied with changing the world. I'd love to be able to just slow down and spend my twilight years, you know, with my family, a big family, and help instill in them the same wonder, you know, and the same lust for life that my parents instilled in me around those bonfires when I was a child, telling stories about Bigfoot jumping up and down on bed springs. That sounds ridiculous, I know, but, you know, my mom and dad, they loved me dearly. They still do. I love them to death. They are fantastic people, and you know, they were very entertaining. But in addition to the funny stories that they would tell and the folk tales, they always worked hard to instill real interest in real subject matter and real mysteries of this existence, not just Bigfoot and things like that. You know, my father, he majored in classics. He speaks Latin, Greek, Hebrew, some Aramaic, some Spanish. You know, he is truly a polymath. The man, he holds, you know, black belts in multiple different styles of karate, including Okinawan Goju-Ryu, you know, and a number of other different styles that he's studied over the years. Shorin-Ryu Jiu-Jitsu, you know, an obscure Cantonese style called Shi. You know, all these different kinds of things. He is, you know, one of the most gifted minds in terms of his political philosophy. He is a musician, and boy, I think I play guitar pretty well. That guy, he can pick up any instrument with strings on it and play it well, up and down the neck, and give you lessons and teach you how to play it better. You know, these are the kind of people I grew up around. And then if you actually visit my home, if you ever visited my home, you'd see paintings that my mother actually did. You know, she is a fantastic artist. She's an artisan. She works not only with paints and pencils, but leather, and she can work leather, and she can do things like that. She's a tremendous cook, and she's an incredible storyteller. And growing up as a child, you know, I always heard stories, folklore, and things from my mother. And then there were the other stories. They weren't folk tales. They were stories of other things, you know, strange things. Physical anomalies is, you know, the best I could use in terms of trying to describe them to you now. And my mother always sought to try and instill in me a curiosity to pursue those things, whatever they may be. And my father, in turn, instilled in me an ability to discern with the knowledge available right from wrong, truth from untruth, you know, fact from fiction, and to try and better understand the nature of reality around us. And I realize now, so many years later, it's not about aliens or Bigfoot or UFOs. It's about life. It's about living. It's about reality. And what my mission in life is to try and understand the world around us. But every now and then we get little cracks in the great wall that keeps us from understanding the great truth of living. Those little cracks, those little anomalies are the ones that let the light in. Those are your Bigfoot, your UFO, your physics anomalies, your neutrinos firing through space and through your brain and traveling faster than the speed of light, or at least according to some. Those are the things that we study on this program, and that is why every week from 8 to 11 p.m. on Tuesdays, I sit here and ramble, do what I do best, the mouth of the South. Hey, look, I'm going to live up to that name, like it or not, take it or leave it. I'm so glad so many of you take me as I am. I'm Micah Hanks. This is the Graylian Report. We'll be back for more rambling right after this.
Want to have some fun? Maybe get a little bit of insight. Get a lay of the land. Want to know what's really going on? Do what I do. Listen to Future Theater. It airs every Saturday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the InceptionRadioNetwork.com. We'll see you there.
You know, I think in order to understand so many of the anomalies that we discuss on this program, it is the Graylian Report, by the way, and you've locked in. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Micah Hanks, the mouth of the South, chatting it up here on the airwaves with you every Tuesday night. And the fantastic guys that help keep this program on the air each week, who I'm so thankful for, Chris Hayes, our producer, engineer Matt Oakley. There's so many others. Dick Oakley, our voice talent, John Anderson, our other voice talent, and the lovely Holly.
And thank God that Chuck, intern guy, is
poor Chuck.
Gone. I am so happy.
You know what rhymes with Chuck? Jerk. Chuck was a jerk.
Close. Yeah, Chuck was worthless.
Chuck, you know, our latest intern here at Graylian International, unfortunately no longer is with us. But that said, we'll let him go and just leave it be. To the phones now. Caller, you're live on the program with us. Hang on just 1 second. We've got to cut down that music. Matt, can you catch that for me? Thank you, buddy. All right. Caller, you're on the program. Welcome to the Graylian Report.
Hey. Real quick, as far as human evolution goes, I do believe that it actually did start in the heart of Africa as far as Cro-Magnon goes, mm-hmm. as far as the Neanderthals being up north. I do believe their depiction is completely wrong.
Okay.
The way their eyes were set, they had to be really big. And they're, you know, making it more or less... you know, them being nocturnal. And I do believe that they were cannibalistic as well, because there is evidence of Neanderthal bones actually having cut marks on them. So
I've heard these reports, and it's funny that you bring that up, caller. And by the way, actually, when it comes to, you know, strange beings and things like that, Bigfoot, things like that seen out there, do you think that there is any potential for those kinds of creatures to exist in similar ways, nocturnal, big-eyed, behemoths wandering around out there. I mean, do you think the Bigfoot could be something like that as well, or is this just something that, you know, that's in our evolutionary past as humans?
No, I definitely believe that there is definitely something out there undiscovered. I mean, we're constantly discovering new species on a daily basis. I mean, especially like up north in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have these vast wildernesses that, you know, they're uninhabited, they're mostly unexplored. The possibilities are endless.
They certainly are. And thank you, by the way, for your call. We'll go ahead and we'll let you go. Appreciate that for calling in with that information. It's interesting that you call in with that, because the very next story I hope to go to, how continents shaped human culture. I put this up on my Facebook just a few minutes ago. How did humans evolve over time, and are there significant differences between people in different parts of the world? We'd like to know your thoughts, and if you'd like to call into the program with your ideas, the number to reach us here in the studio is 828-398-4886, and Skype users can join us at Graylian Report on Skype. But there's this new story. This appeared at the website Past Horizons, Adventures in Archaeology, asking whether continents could have shaped human culture. You know, during the first segment of tonight's, or rather the first segment of this hour, I talked about some of the political vitriol going on out there. Some of the strange attitudes there are today in the world with regard to humans and how we act and how we interact with one another. We think we have moved forward so much as a society, and yet we're still riddled. We're still plagued by the attitudes of yesteryear. We are still plagued and troubled by these, you know, and it's horrifically outdated modes of thought that we deal with, whether it be attitudes that are that trend toward racism, or attitudes that trend toward, I think, even anti-technological. I think a lot of people fear progression toward technology as a species and things like that. There are a lot of outmoded beliefs out there and belief systems. And we like to think that as a culture, as humans, we are better than that. And yet, especially in America, the political system is rife with it. And like I said, you know, we use accusations or any little bit of proof that we might have here or there that such and such, you know, well, is a racist, or such and such, you know, is an anti-Semite, or such and such is anti-Christian, or such and such is anti-Muslim. All these things are used as and form the basis of a lot of political strategy in America today. It's crap. It's BS is what it is. These things should not form the basis of our American political structure. But nonetheless, whatever it is that we are really up against, whatever we are really facing, if we really want to progress and do it better as human beings, you know, we've got to move forward, and we've got to tackle the real issues at hand and stop throwing mud on each other. So our caller called in, and we appreciate you, caller, for calling in and joining the program with your ideas. You know, was commenting on, well, how have humans evolved over time? Are there significant differences between people like you and I in different parts of the world? What about the notion of there being animals out there as yet discovered by science? You know? Could some of those things be like humans or close to them? Bigfoot, creatures like that? You know, this is really unsettling territory for a lot of people, I realize. I realize it's really outside of a lot of people's comfort zone. But the truth of the matter is that I think we have to accept, especially when it comes to looking at nature, the beauty that lies in the differences, not just between us as people, but between us as species, humans, and the rest of the animal kingdom. What sets us aside as people, as humans, and what gifts we are allowed as humans by virtue of decision-making and choice and thought, the ability to love openly. You know, C.S. Lewis wrote about the different kinds of love. Now, I don't know that other animals in the animal kingdom, you know, my cat, you know, or Matt's dog, or one of your pets, you know, I don't know that those animals do or don't perceive love on many levels like you or I would. But I know this, that as humans, we are able to discern between different kinds of love, whether it be, a love of my brother, my friend, a love of a woman, a cosmic love that I talk about so often on this program. And when I'm on stage performing, I always tell the audiences I perform for, I say, cosmic love to you, friends, and some people laugh and giggle about it. But, I have more and more people coming up to me after these shows saying, I know what you're talking about. There is a unity. There is something underlying that governs all humans, brings us together, makes us one. And as humans, despite the fact that some of us sense that, we don't really act like we're all one, do we? We don't really act like we care that much about one another. It's troubling. It's not just political, it's socioculture. I mean, it's not just here in America either. We have in India, still the use of outmoded caste systems. Whatever happened to individual liberties and the worth of individuals? But I do wonder sometimes if culture and our evolution as a species hasn't perhaps affected some of these issues. And so the story that I alluded to earlier, I do want to try and get to this before the next break catches us. Past Horizons, which is Past Horizon, or rather PastHorizonsPR.com is the website. It had a story this week, how continents shaped human culture. They say, using advanced genetic analysis techniques, of evolutionary biologists at Brown University and Stanford University studied nearly 700 locations on human genomes drawn from more than 5 dozen populations. They say that technology spread more slowly in the Americas than in Eurasia, and that the continent's orientation seems to explain the difference. After humans arrived in the Americas 20,000 to 40,000 years ago, genetic data shows the migrating populations didn't interact as frequently as groups in Eurasia. Now that's interesting to me, and I'll tell you why, because again, I notice, I've worked as a, not just a production assistant and a talk show producer and host for a number of years, but also as a journalist and a writer. Years ago, I was interviewing a friend of mine. He wasn't a friend at the time. He was a person I was interviewing. Since then, we've become friends. He lives in the UK. His name's David Ferrant. David Ferrant is a psychic researcher and a great person, a wonderful guy. And I tried to call him, and I got a wrong telephone number. And it was late in the evening here in the United States, so it had to have been the middle of the night in the UK. But I called, and this English woman answered the telephone. And I explained to her, I'm an American journalist, and I'm trying to reach a Mr. David Ferrant. And she says, well, I don't think I know the man, but now what does he do? She was so content in the middle of the night to carry on a conversation with me. In America, you don't find that kind of accommodating attitude very often, I was so thankful that this woman, despite the fact that I'd obviously woken her up in the middle of the night, she was so willing to help me out, and help me try and find the right number that I was trying to reach. It's not like that. People aren't as conversational here in the United States, Or at least it doesn't seem that way. Nick Redfern, who will join us next hour here on the program. Nick Redfern, of course, is one of those guys, and the reason I'm so anxious to get him on the program tonight, he's just coming on for an update. We're not interviewing him specifically about any book or anything like that. Nick is a field correspondent for the program, and I like to get him on from time to time. And Nick is one of those guys where if I go a few weeks and we haven't really had any significant correspondence, I get a little email or a phone call, just checking in, mate, how are you? I like that. I like seeing that. And you don't see that as much in the Americas. And so this study talks about how, listen to this, after humans arrived in the Americas 20,000 to 40,000, as much as 40,000 years ago, genetic data shows that migrating populations didn't interact as frequently as groups in Eurasia. So are there aspects about, the continents themselves, the lay of the land, and the way that we evolved as we, as a species, evolving thousands of years ago? Is there something about the way that we interacted with our environment that changed fundamentally who we are and how we interact with one another in different parts of the world? Looking at this issue on a geopolitical level,
looking at the entire world and the political structure from country to country, nation to nation, you know, one end of the globe to the next, do these kinds of issues also affect political attitudes from one country to another? Is it really safe to assume that if we all were just nice to one another, we all engaged in open trade and honest, you know, interaction politically and economically with other countries, that we'd all get along and there would never be any wars and that there would never be any conflicts or anything like that? Is it really safe to assume that? Or are there differences deep, deep within us as humans that govern those attitudes and those ideas and those ideologies? And are these things to be aware of? And in accepting these differences, rather than trying to put a cookie-cutter mold over every human being and saying that we are all equal, we are all equal in terms of the worth of human beings. But the thing is that we're all so different, and when we put a cookie-cutter mold over ourselves and everyone else and try and say that all humans are the same, and we don't relish in and accept and learn to enjoy and appreciate those differences from culture to culture and person to person, when we impose a false pretense of what is normal and what is right on others based on our own ideas and our own justifications, what is accepted, what is normal, can that cause problems? And what's so terrible I see today in this world is that I think that often when people are willing to question those kinds of things, they are called a number of things. They're called crazy. They're called wrong. They're called even racist sometimes, you know. I think that that true discrimination, the root of it lies in not accepting the beauty of the differences between people on this planet, and accepting that we are not all made the same, but that we are certainly made equal, and that only in embracing those differences can we seek to effect real change and help one another and understand one another and get to a point where we all do indeed get along on this planet. Just between you and I don't think the politicians here in America are very interested in that kind of change. That's just my two cents. I'm Micah Hanks. When we come back, we'll finish up this hour, and then next hour we'll be joined by Nick Redfern right here on the Graylin Report. Stay tuned. All right, guys, I know you've been putting it off. Your thirst for knowledge is incredible, insatiable, but your wallet says otherwise. So you haven't been able to subscribe to all those classy magazines out there bringing you to the edges of the fringe just like you and I do every week here on the Graylin Report. Well, good news for you. You can now subscribe to Intrepid Magazine for an entire year and just pay $19.95. Really? That's it? It's no joke. $19.95 will get you an entire year of incredible insight from authors like Nick Redfern, Scotty Roberts, and of course yours truly. It's Intrepid Magazine, boldly going. Visit www.intrepidmag.com today and feel your mind expanding tomorrow.
This is the sound of a flat screen television hurled off a building. Now the new bike your kid wants. These are the things you could have, all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Use Energy Star light bulbs and appliances, and you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
We are live from the depths of the hollow earth tonight, but you know, it's not just, like we were talking about in the last segment, it's not just continents and well, sociocultural differences around the world that shape who we are. I think probably that certain people's brains work a little different from others. I don't necessarily mean just psychics.
Wait. We're live?
We are live, yes.
Oh, okay.
Broadcasting from the dark heart of the Appalachian Mountains, Matt Oakley. We are, you know. Anyway. You know,
I had gotten a memo about it earlier, but...
This guy's dressed to the nines, too, by the way.
I am. I look good tonight.
Whoever Matt Oakley is, he showed up for the program. Well, he knows that looks could kill, and he looks like he's ready to do somebody in. You know, Chris Hayes got a photograph of me up on the Twitter. Hey, are you following us on Twitter yet? Yeah, I'm talking to you.
Yeah, it's at Graylian _report.
That's right. Yeah, follow us on Twitter, the official Twitter feed of the Graylian Report. You can also follow me on Twitter. I'm easy to find. You can just do a search for Micah Hanks, but my actual Twitter feed is... what is my actual Twitter feed? Anybody know what my real Twitter feed is? I think it's Micah Hanks. No, it's not.
I don't even follow you. I don't even think Graylian Report follows you.
It's Micah Hanks. Yeah.
That's flattering.
Graylian Report should follow me. No, I'm at Micah...
You should follow Graylian Report. I'm sorry.
I follow Graylian... Look, I am the Graylian Report, okay? I'm the gravy train. That's right. Oh, gosh. No, you can find me on Twitter at Micah Hanks, M-I-C-A-H... Hanks like the actor Tom. Micah Hanks on Twitter. And then, of course, if you'd like to follow the Graylian Report on Twitter, you can find us also, Graylian_report. We wouldn't be so hard to find if I didn't have to spell everything out, right? That's me and my funny word choices. But anyway, if you'd like to join us live by phone, we do have a little bit of time, at least in this segment, if you want to call in. The studio number is 828-398-4886.
And it's Open Line Tuesday.
It is Open Line Tuesday. Yeah, whatever's on your mind. You know, we put it out to folks a little bit earlier. You know, how did humans evolve over time? And that's what we were talking about during the last segment. Our caller called in with some nice insights about that. And I asked him, just kind of as a one-off, because we were coming out of a cryptozoology discussion during the first hour, do you think this pertains to the evolution, potentially, of strange creatures in other parts of the world, including Canada and things like that? You know, I'm interested in tying this in with anomalous subject matter, no matter how fringe and strange I might seem for doing so at various times. But you don't have to call in and tell us just your ideas on how humans evolved over time. You can call in with anything you want to. That's why we call it Open Lines. And we will be joined by Nick Redfern at the top of next hour, but we have a brief window in time right now. Probably be just about 12 minutes if you want to try and get in with something and we can take your calls. So that's 828-398-4886, and Skype users can reach us at Graylian Report to contact us here on the program. Otherwise, before we busy out the calls, we're going to have a little fun.
Come on, everyone in the chat room. You know you want to call and talk to us.
The chat room.
Yeah, I see what you're talking about in the chat room.
You know who I'm talking to. Come on. Give us a call.
You know, if you're not already in the chat room, if you'd like to listen to the program and incorporate, well, your thoughts but not call in, you know, you can also join us in the chat room there. Just, you know, click the link on the stream. We have that available at graylianreport.com as well as on our Facebook page. And finally, of course, you know, we've linked it to our Twitter accounts as well. Once you're listening to the stream, well, there's a chat window right there next to the streaming player, and you can include your ideas there just as well. Or, you know, for that matter, if you want to send us an email, you can also reach us that way, info@graylianreport.com. So those are all the ways that you can reach us here on the program. Now, Machines Like Us website talked about this story this week, a discovery that challenges what they call conventional wisdom on the brain mechanisms of learning. You know, maybe it isn't just continental drift and things like that, you know, and where we are and who we are that make humans of today the humans of today. A discovery that challenges these preconceptions about human thought occurred at UCLA, where neurophysicists have claimed to have found that there is an optimal brain rhythm or frequency for changing synaptic strength. And further, Like stations on a radio dial, each synapse is tuned to a different optimal frequency for learning. The findings, which provide a grand unified theory for the mechanisms that underlie learning in the brain, may lead to possible new therapies for treating learning disabilities. Now, do you know what this reminds me of? When I was writing Magic, Mysticism, and the Molecule, I considered putting an entire section in the book that dealt with techno-shamanism.
But then you would have had to change the title to Magic, Mysticism, Techno-Shamanism, and the Molecule.
Exactly, and I just think, you know...
Doesn't have the same ring to it.
It's not as catchy, and so I didn't go
and
with that.
And it's in no way nearly as alliterative.
Yes, indeed. And are you saying I'm illiterate?
If I respect nothing else, it's alliteration. I love alliteration.
Oh, alliteration, yes, yes.
Alliteration.
Yes, well, my name begins with an M, and I thought that if I wrote a book that the initials of the primary title were MMM, then, you know, it'd be easier for people to remember. Remember. But anyway.
Are you just talking about your member?
I was not. No, I was saying remember.
And we're going to get Ritzy on the
Would you just be my friend? Would you stop talking and just be my friend? Put a lid on it. I'm talking here, okay?
I'll be the best friend you ever had, boy.
Oh, I don't think I need any more friends like that. You know, friends like that, I don't need enemies. But anyway. Techno-shamanism, binaural rhythms. You know, the fact that we as humans, think about it. You know, ancient cultures would pound on drums, you know, and they would dance to rhythms and beats. And even today, you know, I mean, when you get a good, great, big, old, deep, bootylicious rhythm going and everything, you're in a dance club. Look, let me tell you, you want to move to it. Chris is turning purple. Oh, man, this is a new.
Or Micah is like listening to Black Eyed Peas and stuff.
Micah, will you never, poop? Ever say bootylicious again? It just sounds so alien coming out of your mouth.
Well, that's what I want.
You
I'm
say
going
it so
for it.
Proper, too. You're like, bootylicious.
I am William F.
You're
Buckley,
white.
Actually.
You're white as hell.
Here's the problem, is that my guest this evening coined the term bootylicious, and he wanted to tell us more about it. So I should like to begin by asking this gentleman, if you think that bootylicious-isms are indeed the way of the future, and binaural rhythms are the way that we can affect change through consciousness, how exactly do we institute binaural rhythms in a bootylicious way that the masses can grasp? And we're not talking about grabbing boons and buns and the likes. Go ahead. But then there's no guest, and then I'm left with my William Buckley impersonation and the crickets chirping in the background. Am I the only guy that thinks William Buckley's hilarious?
No, he's awesome.
I love the guy.
We just have to rehearse this.
Your
man.
Dad resembles William F. Buckley.
He does a little bit.
Dick Oakley, little known fact, Dick Oakley, even though he shares the same last name as our engineer Matt Oakley,
there's
no actual relation between them. Well, I'm just kidding. No, it's Matt's father. Funny thing about that is Matt... you know, Matt, you don't have the radio experience that your dad did. Your dad's a radio veteran. That guy's worked as...
Thanks for calling me out.
No, man. He's just saying, it's in your blood.
It's in your blood. And that's why you're such a natural on this program. Guy does a pretty good job, though, doesn't he? I have to say. Binaural rhythms, though, whatever they are, you know, bootylicious or not, the rhythms, the human physiology responds to rhythms. You know, you want to get out there and shake that healthy butt, you know? Yeah.
Such as Chris is doing right now.
Chris is wiggling. He's doing a little seat dancing, man.
I'm going to take it low here in a minute.
Take it low, man. Well, you can't get any lower than the mo-ho. Yo. Yo-yo, a wicked cup of cocoa in the mo-ho. Yo. But anyway, bro. Oh, man, we're rhyming.
Don't ever call me that again.
Oh, if a rhyme only costs a dime, well, I could... Anyway, okay.
You could drop your electrical tape.
Yes, we dropped the... You know, I was throwing it to you because as an engineer, I thought that you might need some. Tape my mouth shut here in a minute. Yeah. It's getting out of hand.
Put a lid on it, Micah.
I should put a lid on it. I should really put a lid on a lot of things, I think. But anyway.
Our Chinese food from last week.
Yes, yes. Well, I wasn't going to leave Chinese food sitting around the cave, you know, for...
I mean, I think a week in refrigeration.
I don't think Chinese food is good at all unless it's a week old.
Yeah.
Really?
And you just throw it out.
Well, I won't do that next time. I'll cook dinner for you guys next time.
If you could make that lovely dish you made last time, the... what was it? Eggs Benedict with salmon?
Oh, yes.
Oh, man,
did you like
that?
Phenomenal.
And I got to tell you, Micah... Your hollandaise sauce is some of the best hollandaise sauce I've ever had. I've had hollandaise sauce in really fancy restaurants. Excuse me. And it only tastes like lemon cream. It's just so sour and vinegary. But yours, Micah, good Lord, if I could marry you just for your hollandaise sauce, I would. You know what? Let's go to Iowa.
Yeah, looks like we're moving the show.
I wouldn't call it really...
Iowa?
Yeah, Iowa. Gay marriage is legal in Iowa.
Oh, well.
Which is cool. Actually, you know what? Let's not get married because I don't want to give you the tax benefits. Let's just form an LLC of hollandaise sauce.
You know, despite the benefits of taking up on that offer, I'm going to have to respectfully decline.
You don't want to LLC with me?
You know, I mean, I'm sure it sounds like a good
business. We could do a DBA. I mean, whatever.
Sounds like a good business move, but no, I'm gonna have to leave you hanging on that one, buddy. But I'll make you some of that hollandaise sauce. You know, yeah, that's a trick. You can't put too much lemon juice in it, right? And when you buy that stuff in the bottle in the store and everything, you know, it's got that soy extract crap in it, and it tastes like, you know, it tastes like wood glue poured over your eggs, and probably digests about as well as wood glue would if you were, well, you know, trying to pass that off as hollandaise sauce. You know, they look about the same. I'm not convinced that what I buy in the store and they call hollandaise sauce is actually not wood glue in a bottle. You know? So, yeah, I make it, you know, fresh from egg yolks and butter and, you know, all these things that are really healthy for you. Yeah, we don't do it often, but there's a wonderful kitchen upstairs in the building here at International. And, you know, I know Rush Limbaugh has his own chef, you know, who cooks for him over there at the EIB radio network. Well, here at Grayling International, we don't really have a standalone cook. Holly does a lot of the cooking, but you know what else? I cook often, too.
And you're going to have to let me cook for you every once in a while.
You are a good cook. You know, both you guys are tremendous cooks, and I know it runs in your family, Matt, because your father's a fantastic cook, too.
Don't we have a new intern coming up, too?
What's his name? Yeah, we got rid of Chuck, but
if they end up anything like Chuck, I may be cooking them.
Poor Chuck. Yeah. You know, I hope Chuck's not listening right now and everything.
I hope he is.
No, I hope he is. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, Chuck. Chuck, jerk you. You're a jerk.
Poor Chuck.
I can't say what rhymes with your name
Chuck,
on the air.
Chuck was a visit. He was a victim of circumstance is what he was. But what's the other guy's name? Who's the new guy? Chuck is being replaced by.
Is it Art Vandalay?
It is Dave. Yeah, Dave's the new guy. And who's Dave? I don't even know what Dave does. You know, you have to have a hell of a resume to be able to apply here at the. Hey, you know what? No, speaking of, to apply at the Grayling Report. Oh, go ahead. What is it, Chris?
Well,
what
no, I just have to say, I've never met a Dave I liked. So he's got a lot to live down, actually, because I carry grudges for years. The last Dave I knew, I was 8, and he kicked me in the shin, and anyone else named Dave is going down.
It's taken me years just to get back on your good list, in fact, yeah, so I can imagine what a person named Dave would have to go through.
It's going to take me years to shake off that story.
Which story?
Chris's story. It sucked.
Which story?
Which story?
The 8-year-old story.
You know what? You know what? I could tell you the story of what happened to me in kindergarten. I mean, I already told you,
yeah,
Matt,
you
off the air, but I'm not going to talk about it.
No, let's not talk about it. But I do want to give acknowledgement, okay, really quick to a few of our other field correspondents, because we've added some new ones here at the program. Like I said, if you want to be a part of this show, not just anybody qualifies, but we do every now and then, you know, take into consideration people who are listeners of this program who'd like to become more involved. And if they meet the rigorous qualifications necessary to be able to become a field correspondent or in other capacities involved in this program, you know, we will at least consider those things. But we're very picky about who we allow to become more involved with the program. That said, I do want to point out that we do have a list of fantastic field correspondents. I might go down through a number of them here because we have so many. You know, Nick Redfern's going to be joining us next hour. He's our UFO and cryptozoology affiliate. William Michael Mott also covers politics, science, and Hollow Earth mysteries. My friend Jim Cota Jarvie from Georgia handles politics, news, and linguistics. My brother Caleb Hanks also covers science, conspiracy, and news, as well as just some general interest stuff. Mr. Mobius, the enigmatic Mobius, is a science and engineering advisor and field reporter for the program. Vance Pollock, who's been a guest on the program in the past, is also our history, journalism, and obscurities field reporter. He's a fantastic guy. We also have some fantastic voice talent who I've mentioned a few times. John W. Anderson, who also handles news and commentary in addition to his epic voice talent that he lends to the Grayling Report. Dick Oakley, the father of our engineer and producer back here, Mr. Matt Oakley. He handles news, politics, and, well, he's got a classic set of pipes. Like I said, Dick Oakley's worked for more news stations as
Redskins. He was the voice of the Redskins for a while.
Yeah, yeah. And so every week when you hear, "This is the Grayling Report with Micah Hanks," that's Dick Oakley. And, yeah, there's a reason why that voice sounds so good. Of course, joining us during Hour 1 tonight was Dakota Smokey Waddell, our crypto news field reporter. Christopher McCollum, you hear him often on the program, our news, politics, and international affairs field reporter. And then we have a couple of new names that I'd like to add. Oh, also, I'm sorry, I have to also mention Marvin Bishop, who's our science, conspiracy, and news general interest reporter. based out of Florida. But we have three new names I want to toss out there. Tyler Pittman, who's been a guest on the program before. He's also a Graylian Report field correspondent who doesn't get enough frequent mention on the program. He handles photojournalism, art, and media. We also have a brand new name that I'd like to mention, Christopher Germain, who handles health, holistic science, medicine, and esoteric sciences. He's a correspondent based out of Highlands, North Carolina. He's a fantastic person and a close personal friend of mine. And then finally, last but not least, saving maybe the best for last, Mr. Dallas Michael Reese, who handles not only technical drawing and visuals, but also UFOs, and he is also a new correspondent for the program. If you are interested in becoming a field correspondent, you know, again, like I say always, we're very picky about this, but we will consider taking you on board. If you have something that you can lend to this program, we're always looking for people whose news, knowledge, and insight will help make this program, well, a little more than it what it would be without your help and insight. And we do rely on you out there in the listening audience to help make this program better from week to week. It doesn't get much better than with the guys right here in the studio with me, our two acclaimed producer and engineer dynamic duo partners here, Mr. Chris Hayes and Matt Oakley. And they'll be back with me, Micah Hanks, the Mouth of the South, right after this here on the Graylian Report.
Hey guys, Jamie Havoc in here for UFO Mag. Do you want to receive the best writing there is in ufology, the best writers, editors, and flat out the best magazine that ufology can offer? If so, I highly recommend UFO Magazine. You can check it out at ufomag.com. And if you mention that you heard this on radio, you can get 6 issues for $19.95. Check it out, ufomag.com. Don't miss out. And keep up to date on the hottest topics in ufology. For UFO Mag, this is Jamie Havkin.
This is Alice Cooper for RADD. There's a lot of things we have no control of in this world, but that's not the case with drunk driving. If you're going to drink, don't drive. Think ahead and choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives on and so should you.
Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Graylian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
And welcome to the third and final hour of tonight's broadcast. I'm your host, the Mouth of the South himself, Micah Hanks, joined in studio, as always, by our producer extraordinaire, Mr. Chris Hayes, and engineer Matt Oakley. Boy, it's been a fantastic night. And you know, when you've worked in radio for as long as I have, 3 hours could never go by faster than when you are here on the air and having a good time, enjoying the company of, well, like-minded individuals out there like you. And that's why it's always my pleasure to be able to invite other like-minded individuals onto the program. And tonight, joining us live via Texas, the Great Lone Star State, we are joined by my favorite Brit and our crypto and UFO field correspondent, Mr. Nick Redfern. Nick, are you with us?
Going?
Oh, it's going fantastic, and thanks again. I mean, it was kind of short notice getting you on tonight and everything. Normally, we have to work things out in weeks in advance because you are a very busy man, but I hadn't spoken to you in a few weeks, and I was really jonesing to get some Nick Redfern on the program, so thanks for jumping on with us tonight.
Oh, sure, that's not a problem at all.
It's always good to talk to you, brother. So anyway, so what's new in the world of Nick Redfern?
I actually just got back from a conference yesterday out in California, the Conscious Life Expo. It's one that's put on every 6 months at the one of the airports at LAX, and excuse me, one of the hotels. I mean, at LAX. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, I guess, a bit of a departure for me, because it's not strictly a UFO conference. You know, they cover everything from mind-body spirit stuff, animal communication, life after death in animals, and, you know, alternative healing, all sorts of stuff. And but I was there speaking about the Real Men in Black book, and it went down well, got a lot of feedback and interaction, and people who wanted to relate their own accounts or family and friend accounts of things they'd experienced. One thing that actually turned up twice, which was kind of weird, from totally different people, were stories about friends or family members who had been approached by sort of MIB-type characters when the person was specifically working on things like alternative energy technologies, you know, things to kind of do away with fossil fuels and stuff like that. And they kind of got, you know, these veiled warnings to keep their nose out of things like this, you know, kind of. They didn't sound like, you know, the more occult MIB stuff, but more along the lines of, you know, some government threats, something along those lines.
That's interesting. You know, so you say that there was more than one report of that kind of thing going on.
That was a very weird thing. I mean, you know, I kind of expect over time, you know, you get similar reports from people, you know, spread across a year or months or whatever. But to get two reports on that weekend from totally separate people and talking about different time frames of, you know, what one was talking about the early 1960s, somebody else was talking about the late 70s, one was connected with some sort of like a perpetual motion technology, and the other one was in conjunction with something that would be like an alternative to fossil fuels. But basically, it came down to kind of like somebody in the official world not wanting to see the economic status quo kind of threatened and giving out threats, if you like. So,
you know, it's disturbing to me, Nick, that you know, there seems to be whether it's government or you know, for all we know, some sort of an alien technology, you know, or individuals themselves, you know, that stem from some extraplanetary location, whatever it is, there's something going on out there, and these individuals, these MIBs, as we've come to know them, and of course, you know, you, by virtue of the fact that the new book, you know, The Real Men in Black, delves into this deeper probably than any pre-existing books that have ever sought to understand the MIB mystery has, you know, this is something that clearly represents an intelligence, a force, if you will, that seeks to try and stifle not only communication about this sort of thing, but innovation in these fields, you know, that could really move humanity forward. You know, to you, is it a sinister thing, or is it a protective kind of thing, or is it, you know, a protection for our own good? I mean, is it good? Is it bad? What really is going on here?
Well, I think it's the people who are kind of instilling the threats. They see from their perspective as for our good. But for me, you know, I don't see it as for our good at all. You know, it's kind of like, to me, it smacks of just keeping us in our place and not, you know, as I said, not wanting to upset the big corporation stranglehold on, you know, the economy and who supplies the fuel and, you know, everything else. So, you know, from their perspective, I'm sure they think they're doing the right thing. You know, it's kind of like the elite, the small elite telling the mass herd, the rest of us, as they see us, you know, what to do. To me, that's totally wrong. You know, if there's new innovations out there, and ultimately it's for the better, even if it might cause a few upheavals in the world, you know, in the economy, if it works out for the better in the end, you know, to me, I don't see that a small elite should have the right to kind of tell the rest of us what to do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I certainly do. You know, it's funny because there's this expression that's come up between you and I before, Night of the Living Jackboots, you know, and this Orwellian monstrosity, you know, future government trying to control, you know, humanity down to, you know, what we do, what we say, what we eat. You know, and we see a lot of that, not just, you know, in America, but in different parts of the world as well. I mean, it could potentially get really out of hand. And to think that there's some sort of subversive element of control, that to me, Nick, has always been the most, you know, terrifying thing about the MIB mystery in general. And that's part of the reason I wanted to get you on the program at least sometime during the month of October, is because, you know, we're celebrating what we call Croctober here on the Graylian Report. Where we poke a little fun at all the stuff that really scares us. But, you know, the truth is that there is enough out there to really be afraid of, isn't there?
Oh, there is. I mean, to sort of give you like a good little indication, you know, which is sort of perfect for Halloween. On the last day of the conference, the Sunday, because I gave my lecture on, there was like a Q&A Saturday afternoon, and then I did my lecture on the Saturday night. But then on the Sunday, you know, I had nothing to do. So Greg Bishop came over and picked me up, and Greg lives in LA, you know, so he knows the place like the back of his hand. And we went out to Pasadena in a place called Devil's Gate Dam. And Devil's Gate Dam, again, this is why it's so appropriate for Halloween. That's actually where Jack Parsons, you know, sort of one of the world's most infamous and noted occultists.
Oh, yeah.
A brilliant rocket scientist, you know, I guess inadvertently, you know, led NASA to send the Apollo astronauts to the moon. And, you know, his Aerojet Corporation, which he personally founded, you know, produced the solid rocket boosters for the space shuttle. And so we went out to Devil's Gate Dam, which is where the Jet Propulsion Lab was established in 1930 by Caltech. And which the inside joke is that JPL stands for Jack Parsons Laboratory, or Jack Parsons Lives. But where the Halloween thing, I guess, ties in is the fact that the Devil's Gate Dam, it's called that because it has this huge rocky outcrop which looks like the sort of side profile of a demon, you know, with like a hooked nose, an eye, nostril, chin, and like a horn on top of his head.
That's pretty fitting it's pretty fitting for something associated with Jack Parsons, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And there are a lot of rumors about him engaging in all sorts of occult rituals and rites. And so we went out there to the dam, took some pictures. And, I mean, the interesting thing is, you know, that JPL today, you know, just is overlooked by the dam. When you stand at the top of the dam, you know, JPL is like a mile away in the distance, something like that. Mm-hmm. Then you get, you know, you kind of go down this sort of sort of thickly wooded pathway and over like a small stream, and then you're at the bottom of this huge rocky outcrop where there's like a bored out tunnel section, and we managed to get in there. It's got like gated you know, bars, etc., but there was one where the bar was missing, so it was just wide enough for us to squeeze through and you know, to wander around in this long old tunnel. And it's sort of a creepy, weird place, you know. There were lizards and rats scurrying around and all sorts. So,
oh man, that sounds like what I normally do on my weekends just for fun, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's a lot of graffiti and stuff like that. But it's kind of intriguing, you know, to sort of see this old place where, you know, Jack Parsons had actually once not just worked at, but he actually, before every rocket launch, when he was doing his research there, he used to invoke the Greek god Pan to try and ensure a successful launch. So, I guess it was kind of apt that I should be out there, you know, a couple of weeks before October at Devil's Gate Dam. So.
Oh, most certainly. Most certainly. You know, and there's such a weird, sordid history associated with Jack Parsons. You know, I was writing about him. You know, you and I both write for Mysterious Universe, and I did a post about Jack Parsons just the other day and how, rather infamously, he and L. Ron Hubbard, who went on to form found the Church of Scientology, they had been involved in a lot of ritual activity. They did what was called the Babylon Working back, I think, in 1946, which was an attempt at creating what Aleister Crowley, you know, who, and I believe, now correct me if I'm wrong, I think that Parsons was you know, one of the leading figures with the local Ordo Templi Orientis, you know, under Crowley. Yeah, there in California. You know, Parsons, of course, you know, thought that he could create a literal moon child. Now, a moon child was based on a fiction novel that Aleister Crowley had written, but the idea here was to create an Antichrist, and that Parsons actually literally attempted to do this. You know, I mean, some people would call the man a sexual deviant. Some would call him a mad genius. What we can't deny is that, you know, he was a founder of modern rocketry and a co-founder of the actual Jet Propulsion Lab that you had, you know, visited the location of there. You know, it's a really, really, really strange aspect of Americana and history that a lot of people aren't aware of, and the occult angles associated with it are really just beyond bizarre in every sense.
Well, I mean, a lot of people don't realize that NASA actually named a crater on the moon in Jack Parsons' honor. And every year on Halloween, no less, the Jet Propulsion Lab, they have like a celebration to Parsons where they bring in all these dressed-up mannequins, Parsons and some of his, you know, his friends and colleagues from the time, and they're like a little Jack Parsons party. And, you know, it's kind of funny to imagine that going on. Or I say funny, it's kind of weird and intriguing because, you know, people talk a lot about the occult links with the government. You mm-hmm. find that NASA and the JPL celebrate this guy who was an occultist and who, as rumor had it, had sex with his mother and the family dog, possibly both at the same time.
I read about that. I remember in Final Events you talking about that. I don't think you yeah. used exactly those same words.
I thought I'd keep it a bit cleaner for the radio.
Yes, of course. Great, sure, thank you.
Yeah, but, yeah, I mean, it's fun. I mean, you know, the Chelkis angle aside, it is intriguing that, you know, we find evidence of, you know, kind of like occult overtones in a lot of government activities. And, you know, the very fact that, I mean, there's good evidence now that people like Aleister Crowley were actually doing undercover work for British intelligence, you know, during the First World War and even the Second,
mm-hmm.
That the British intelligence was actually looking at the idea that some of the people in the, you know, in like the military intelligence favoured, and a lot didn't, but they thought, you know, we'll give anything a try, the idea of using the occult to try and fight off the Nazis. And, you know, this was actually spurred on more when British and American intelligence found out, you know, that Hitler was a hot on the trail of a whole bunch of, you know, sort of ancient and sacred artifacts and things like the Ark of the Covenant and the Spear of Destiny.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. We know that the Nazis were very, very interested in and involved in the recovery of, you know, not only ancient artifacts, but, of course, they were interested in ancient texts, you know, the yep. Sanskrit texts of India and things like that. You know, it's funny because there is almost undeniably in every instance, you know, an occult angle that could be applied to virtually everything. And despite the fact that the mainstream scientific, you know, establishment dismisses, you know, occult sciences and the spirituality and, you know, spiritual aspects of all this, you know, we are shown time and time again that government officials have looked at this quite differently and have taken it rather seriously. Whether you want to look at the Stargate programs and things, you know, remote viewing programs, you know, that were funded by the CIA back in the year, you know, several decades ago, or, you know, Nazi occult interest and things like that. There have been people, you know, in almost every, you know, angle and avenue that you could research in history where, you know, government officials have attempted to try and incorporate spiritual sciences and the occult into actual, you know, power plays and political, you know, substructures of government and, you know, and even wars and foreign entanglements and the like.
Yeah, you're right. And, I mean, just coincidentally, you know, you were just talking about mysterious universe. I mean, the new post that's just a mine, I think, went up today or yesterday, I'm not sure which, deals with government files on using sort of religious iconography and things like this as a tool of psychological warfare, one being the Virgin Mary. There's a story in a document that I reference in the article about how there was like a scenario that was being suggested or that had been sort of alleged that the U.S. military was sort of using psychological warfare to sort of create imagery of the Virgin Mary, followed by U.S. tanks, you know, following behind the Virgin Mary as if, you know, to sort of demonstrate to the enemy that, you know, that God was on the side of the U.S., so to speak,
wow.
And you better watch out. And now, this wasn't like holographic stuff, although, you know, there have been rumors about that in later years. This was like subtly spreading stories to that effect and trying to, you know, fighting the enemy, so to speak.
Nick, this is a rare treat because as we're talking right now, a friend of ours, a fellow author, Marie D. Jones, just sent me a message talking about what you and I are describing. She just said, ooh, spooky stuff. It is indeed. And especially the thought that, you know, that, you know, military organizations would try and literally utilize the power of God or at least symbology indicative thereof to try and, you know, gain the upper hand in an entanglement, you know, or a foreign war. I mean, it's fascinating stuff. But, you know, again, this obviously happens, and it's something that we will no doubt continue to have to deal with, you know, probably into the future. I wonder sometimes, Nick, how much of everything that we see in the world today really isn't, you know, I borrow the expression, you know, false flag operations and things like that, something that is intended to create an impression, you know, amongst the general public that something is going on when in fact it's quite the opposite. I even wonder that with regard to UFOs and extraterrestrials quite often.
Well, I think it happens a lot, and I think it happens more and more because people fall for it and it works to control people. You know, it's like half the population, well, I'd say half the population, but, you know, there's like significant numbers of people, you know, at certain times they won't leave the house because they're worried about bird flu. Somebody else won't fly because they're worried about this. You know, you're told not to eat this food anymore, don't drink that. you know, it's like, well, what happened to the days when people, you know, just went out and bought a loaf of bread without looking at the list of ingredients, or somebody drank water out of the tap. Right? I still drink water out of the tap, but I mean, there's plenty of people who wouldn't dream of doing that. Yeah. You know, everybody's frightened to do what they did without thinking about it 20 years ago, 30 years ago. You know, it's like, ooh, you know, you drank tap water. You know, what's wrong with you? You know, you don't take these pills every day for your bone, you know, and all these new diseases that didn't exist 30 years ago, you know, because they're not real diseases. They're just caused by people being forced to shovel down crap.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's basically what,
you know, in other words, the scariest elements of society today are the ones, in a lot of instances, that we are kind of imposing on ourselves.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, fear is an easy way to control people. I mean, you know, you tell somebody, you know, if you go to this part of the country, you're going to get bird flu, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's easy to control. You know, all people, all these new stories come about, this virus, that virus, you know, and we didn't get this first. I'm not saying they don't exist, but what I'm saying is that I think there's a certain faction. I don't even necessarily think at an official level in government. I'm not sort of tarring the government. I actually think it's more sort of the big power players in some of these cabal-type powerful organizations that really pull the strings, and they're the ones who are kind of trying to get everyone in sort of a fear-driven mode. You know what I mean?
Oh, certainly. Most certainly. But I guess maybe I'm guilty in a sense of trying to get people in a fear-driven mode myself, because it is the month of Croctober here on the Graylian Report, and we're trying to get creepy guests on to expand people's minds and, well, keep them awake at night. Nick, I want to thank you again for jumping on the program with us at the last minute tonight and helping, well, not only expand people's minds but scare the living shit out of them.
Well, that's what I like to do.
Yeah, I know. You do a very good job at it, too, Nick. Listen, stay in touch. We'll have you on again sometime soon. And, of course, keep us up to date on what's coming up in the near future with you and your projects, okay?
All right, cool. Thanks, Micah.
Yeah, we always appreciate it, Nick. You take care of yourself, bud. And that wraps up our segment with Mr. Nick Redfern. He's a scholar and a sage in his own right, one of my favorite people in the entire world. It's always good to have him here on the program. When we come back, we'll be probing other mysteries and other aspects of reality here on the Graylian Report, as we always do. It's just always our pleasure to be able to have guys like Nick Redfern help us do that. Indeed, I am Micah Hanks, joined in studio by co-hosts and production engineers extraordinaire Chris Hayes and Matt Oakley, always showing themselves, I mean, you know, doing their best here in the studio to help me make this program what it is and, well, help you enjoy it on a weekly basis. It is the Graylian Report. I'm the Mouth of the South, Micah Hanks, and we'll be back right after this.
Introducing the Communicizer. Go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
I love you, Dad.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report.
And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
We're your ambassadors of the unexplained, and let me tell you, it gets cold down here in the Moho. The Moho discontinuity, the Mohorovic discontinuity, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, hundreds of miles beneath the Earth's surface, where the ice flow gives you no place to go, and you are left to your resolve and, well, to the voices that come to you from the other side of your computer here every week at the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks, joined in studio by Chris Hayes and Matt Oakley. That was Nick Redfern that joined us during the last segment. Always good to have him on the program, lending his insight and, of course, well, scaring the pants off of people out there from week to week. And I'll tell you, Nick does a better job doing that than most people do. In addition to the MIB book that he has, of course, been promoting recently, Nick wrote a book called The NASA Conspiracies that if you really want an interesting perspective, okay, into the inner workings of the U.S. space program and what role they may play, maybe not so much just in covering up, but at least their role with regard to their involvement in the UFO phenomenon, you need to get that book, The NASA Conspiracies by Nick Redfern. In fact, they actually quote little old me, little old Micah Hanks, in the inside front cover of that book, praising Nick Redfern. There's very little I could do but praise Nick Redfern. He's just so knowledgeable in so many different areas, and he's a good pal. I really need to get my stuff together and get down to Texas and visit him sometime soon. Real quick, I wanted to throw out there that the Accelerating Universe Expansion Discovery, this one dates back to 1998. Well, it's just recently snagged a Nobel Prize, long time coming for the Oz U.S. astronomers involved in this. The discovery, first published in 1998, has won the Nobel Prize for Physics for three astronomers, including Brian Schmidt of the Australian National University. This was reported by the British Register, theregister.co.uk, for those who want to look it up, competing with Saul Perlmutter and of the University of California, Lawrence Berkeley of the National Laboratory, and working with Adam Rice of Johns Hopkins University, now famous for their studies with psilocybin and magic mushrooms, the lasting consciousness effects that they can incur on those who take them. And the Space Telescope Science Institute. Schmidt was part of the team that first demonstrated the rate of expansion of the universe and the fact that it is accelerating. That discovery, based on work begun in 1988 by Perlmutter, with Schmidt and Rice beginning their measurements in 1995 by a team led by Schmidt, in which Rice played what the Nobel Prize release describes as a, quote, crucial role, has now been recognized with the U.S. $1.5 million Nobel. And it's an interesting observation indeed, because if indeed a singular Big Bang event is behind all that we perceive as what is real reality in our universe, and yet, as opposed to slowing down progressively, is, you know, because think about this. An explosion occurs, there's a huge blast, and of course it's going to be really violent and strange at first, and then it's going to begin to slow down gradually over time and then dissipate, and there'll be nothingness. Well, much to the contrary, the rate of expansion of the universe, our universe allegedly expanding from a pivotal point, which some astronomers, cosmologists, and physicists call the Big Bang. Actually, I'd say probably most of these individuals call it the Big Bang. Whatever's actually going on, our universe is expanding, and the rate of expansion is actually increasing. What does this mean? Does this mean that our universe is younger than we perceive it to be? Does this mean that our universe is actually growing in ways that our laws of physics could not understand just yet? There are a lot of implications. What if our universe, as we know it, were expanding at such an incredibly quick rate? Because now this is really this is a difficult one for people to wrap their minds around, but I'm going to go ahead and put it out there anyway. Because I so often take for granted how enlightened the listeners of this program are. And you are. I know you are. Lovelies. What if the reason for the expansion and the acceleration of expansion of our universe was because our beginning, okay, what we call a Big Bang, originated in the future. Now, that's a tough one to grasp. How could that actually happen? What could cause that to occur? It's impossible. I'm sure a lot of people would probably say that the rate of expansion of the universe is increasing because the event, the catalyst, as it were, that caused the beginning of reality of space and time as we perceive it as humans began in our future. That seems impossible, doesn't it? But I will say this. However impossible it may seem, when we think about Einsteinian relativity, time dilation, and experiments that already show that space and time do not behave as they appear or can be observed day to day by you and I, if indeed time, and this is something I've preached about until I'm blue in the face, but I'll say it again, because that's what you have to do sometimes when you're trying to drive a certain kind of point or idea home. If indeed time as we know it actually exists in a spatial way but as three-dimensional beings, we cannot perceive it as such. And if you want to be able to understand that analogy better, if I'm not being clear enough as it is, I'm sure there are some like Carl Sagan who could probably express that more clearly. Just get on YouTube and look up Carl Sagan Flatland Dimensional Beings. You'll learn all about this stuff. He does a very good job explaining it. Hopefully I'm doing a decent job right now. If indeed, as three-dimensional beings capable of perceiving time and space in three dimensions like we do, if we cannot perceive time spatially like we can perceive space, moving through a room, walking up and shaking somebody's hand, physically interacting with them, but that time, nonetheless, in an illusory way, as perceived by humans, does exist in that capacity. If time exists indefinitely, and dimensional beings outside of our three dimensions could control and manipulate aspects of our reality, then it becomes more plausible to consider whether what we consider our beginning, our reality, the Big Bang that the physicists all talk about, that Stephen Hawking, Michio Kaku, and so many others talk about all the time, if indeed that could emanate from any point in time, time existing as a constant and not a chronological progression that we perceive moment by moment by moment by moment, is it possible indeed that our beginnings could emanate from a future event? See, this gets into the Doc Brown, "Great Scott, Marty, you're not thinking fourth dimensionally" attitude, you know? The idea of a space-time continuum. And what a, you know, I have to just go ahead and say, I hope I'm not, stepping outside any particular boundaries by saying so, but there's one particular researcher that I correspond with frequently. I won't give that individual's name. But this notion that we share that indeed much of the UFO phenomenon could stem from some future manifestation or future, how would I want to word this? Some future representation of the human species interacting with people like you and I today through an intelligent, almost computerized matrix, a reality matrix. It's a broad concept, but this is why the film The Matrix is so often quoted and used in terms of understanding paranormal and strange phenomena, because the idea that reality as we perceive it may not exist as the five senses allow, that there could be something beyond all that, and that it could be intelligently controlled and even manipulated by agents that are able to operate outside of that. It is something that not just science fiction authors have considered over time. It's something that has been taken very seriously in a variety of different ways, in a variety of different modes of thought, and from a variety of different perspectives. What if future humans, having gone through what Ray Kurzweil and all these guys are talking about in terms of singularity, what if future humans had merged with technology and perceived space and time differently than three-dimensional physical beings like you and I could. What if future humans are capable of interacting with past versions of themselves or past versions of humans? And when we see strange physics anomalies, UFOs flying around to the sky, and other strange, weird stuff that we talk about each week on this program, what if these are the way that humans today perceive interactions with future mechanical humans in a post-singularity future that are able to perceive space and time not as, well, physical space and then the progression of time like you and I would look at it, looking at a watch or watching, you know, a clock ticking, but they can actually move through time. Time travel, as you and I might call it, I think it's probably more complex than just traveling through what we call time. It's a crazy thought. It's really far out there, I know. It's difficult to discern. I hope I'm being clear about that because, you know, there are so many possibilities available to us. Who knows what's actually going on? And what if the UFO mystery were a part of all this? What if it were such? And I always talk about the fact that we don't have evidence, compelling evidence, I think, to substantiate the notion that aliens are extraterrestrial, in other words, beings from outer space. Well, if future humans could manipulate space-time in ways that allowed them to interact with people like you and I, in what we would perceive as the past, or the future, or the present for that matter, well, that's an interesting alternative for the UFO enigma, isn't it? Maybe these things aren't aliens from space after all. Maybe what we are dealing with is indeed something quite different and something a lot closer to home than most people are willing to realize. We'll wrap things up when we come back right after this. I'm Micah Hanks, joined in studio by Chris Hayes and the Reverend himself, Matt Oakley, here on your weekly hub for the strange, the unusual, pushing you beyond the fringes of insight and occasionally insanity, especially when we talk about future humans and the matrix of reality. This is your matrix of reality. I'm Micah Hanks. It's the Graylian Report.
My name is Dale Pazinski, and this is how I live United. I volunteer with United Way, helping the homeless in my community by teaching computer skills and helping them build a basic resume to save on their very own USB drive. It's huge when somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Carl Sagan once wrote that the questioning mind needs to be instilled with both skepticism and wonder, for the universe is a pretty big place, filled with undelved mysteries, sciences, and life that we've barely begun to comprehend. Every month, Intrepid Magazine brings you both the wondrous and the skeptical. Intrepid Magazine focuses on science, metaphysics, UFOs, politics, conspiracies, and unexplained phenomena, all offered up by Intrepid's cadre of writers and contributors, comprised of a host of seasoned authors, pundits, and recognized names in their fields. The universe is indeed a big place, and where other magazines leave off, Intrepid Mag is just beginning. Subscribe to Intrepid Magazine today at www.intrepidmag.com. That's www.intrepidmag.com.
Welcome back to the program. This is the final segment of this week's show. I'm feeling a temporal dissonance right now as we are chilling to the tunes of Paul Workman, one of our listeners who submitted some music to feature here on the Graylian Report. If you have music that you'd like to have featured on the program, you can reach us at info@graylianreport.com and you can send that along or a download link. We're always interested in getting people's art on the program. Art is good. I'm an artist. An artiste, if you will. Even though Chris and Matt laugh at me when I talk about my art. That's okay. That's okay. I see how you guys are. I know who you are. I know who you work for.
I have never laughed at a single thing you've ever said, Micah. Ever.
Oh, no, you haven't ever. No, you really haven't. Chris Hayes, that's my best pal in the world here, just laughing his ass off at me here. Just having a good old time. Just turning.
I liked that hesitation there.
Turning
that was
pink
great.
And shut up, Matt. Put a lid on it. I'm talking.
Hey man, I turn pink all the time because I'm Irish. It's not.
Matt, what's his problem? Is he? What is your problem, man? Is it?
Dude, I'm Irish. And I don't turn.
You're not Irish.
I'm Irish. No, we're all Irish.
You're sort of Irish.
We're sort of Irish.
I'm the most Irish here.
Just putting
that out there.
Would you just stop being Irish and be my friend?
I told you outside. I don't have friends.
Oh, that's right. You've buried too many to make new ones, right?
I have brothers.
Well, I'm your brother. We're family.
You're my brother now.
I've been initiated.
Hold my hand.
I'm a member of the family. Oh, I don't know if I want to say that. I don't know if I want to dive that deep into all this. But anyway, welcome back to the program. It's the final segment of tonight's edition of the Graylian Report live. You know, we will, if you're interested in calling into the program, take your phone calls. Let's see here. We will we'll attempt to try and get people on the program if they want to. The telephone number to reach us live tonight is 828 area code 398-4886. And then Skype users can also reach us via the Skype ID Graylian Report. That's Graylian Report. And if you want to follow us online at our fantabulous website where we feature all of our news and updates from beyond the fringe, well, you can reach us at www.graylianreport.com. There's a new feature at the Graylian Report. If you visit the website, in the middle column, you'll see send us an email at the Graylian Report. It now says send us an email. All you have to do is literally hover over that and press, well, you can click with your mouse. It will allow you to send an email directly to info@graylianreport.com. Address it to whoever you like, because no matter who you send it to, it will reach the intended audience as needed.
Regardless of the fact that Chris and I also have Graylian Report emails.
You both do. Like I said, however, people will be able to reach whoever they're trying to reach at the button that they push. Now, if you want to get specific and send an email to producer Chris Hayes, you can send it to producer@graylianreport.com.
And I can tell you that I guarantee I am the most likely out of all three of us to respond to you. Within 5 minutes, because it all comes to my phone.
He apparently is, yes. So please, you know, email producer@graylianreport.com. I think that's it. Any other emails we need to put out, Chris? I can't think of anything.
No, I don't think so. No.
I think we got all the bases covered.
Something about Reverend Jerk at Yahoo dot something or other. I don't know.
Reverend.
No, is that not it?
No. Who's the guy? Who's the dude?
Dude.
You know that
Spooky
other guy?
Dude.
Oh, Chuck. No. He didn't know. We got rid of Chuck. No.
He doesn't have an email anymore.
Oh, there was somebody else. No.
There's Holly.
Holly. But does she have a Graylian email? We haven't even, you know, she has one, but we don't let anybody know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can say it out loud.
Holly's, no,
I won't.
It's precious. Yeah. She only bathes with Ivory soap. I mean, that's how precious she is.
I mean,
is,
it's
know.
Not dominatrix at something or
No. We didn't give Chuck an email, though, and there's a good reason why we didn't give him. Let's see here. Does John Anderson, does he have an email address at Graylian Report? I don't think he does, actually. Let's see here. Do I have info@graylianreport goes to me, producer? Yeah, I guess that's the only emails I can think of right now.
Yeah, right offhand.
Oh, Matt! Matt's back there. Oh, God, Matt. Yes. engineer@graylianreport.com if you want to email Matt Oakley.
It's doubtful, though. It's really doubtful.
Have you ever gotten an email at engineer@graylianreport.com?
Aside from you guys?
The intro work, intradisciplinary emails. Yes, well, you know.
Like, Matt, stop eating my sesame cake.
No, I'm serious. Stop eating my sesame cake. Yes. Oh, my goodness gracious. Yes, indeed. So, yes, within the final 10 minutes of the program, if you would like to join us by phone, 828-398-4886, or you can visit us via Skype and join the conversation at Graylian Report, G-R-A-L-I-E-N Report on Skype. That said, now there's one story I wanted to get to from one of my favorite websites, beforeitsnews.com. Talking about how a Nazi expert has claimed that he has proof that Hitler died in the 1960s with a rather enigmatic and grainy photograph of Hitler with white hair and sunken cheeks. Did the Führer actually pass away in the 1960s? And if so, how? How did he escape death? Although official history contends that Hitler committed suicide with his newlywed wife Eva Braun on April 30th, 1945, and that their corpses were burned by others in the Berlin bunker, Abel Basti claims proof the story is a fabrication. According to Basti's meticulous research, the leader of the Third Reich spent his last years as an art dealer. Oh, come on.
Well, he actually was an artist before he got into politics.
He did go to art school, didn't he?
Have you seen any of Hitler's art?
Well, I mean, it's god awful, but he actually was a painter and everything.
He had, oh goodness.
I know that he'd had some training in that in the field of aesthetics and art. But now, according to Basti's meticulous research, the leader of the Third Reich spent his last years as an art dealer and had facial plastic surgery to change his appearance. Imagine that! Well, we had Klaus Barbie and these guys running around South America and helping the CIA and all this kind of stuff. Hitler was spending his twilight years being an art salesman, an art dealer. Those are just two of the astounding revelations that respected Argentine journalist and historian Abel Basti documents in his book, Hitler's Exile. While the book was a runaway bestseller across South America, it's been suppressed in the United States and Russian Federation. Those two countries still maintain that Germany's Führer committed suicide during the last days of World War II. The claim that Hitler and some high-ranking Schufelstaffel officers escaped Germany and fled... What are you laughing at?
You said that so wonderfully.
Schufelstaffel. Actually,
you,
I mispronounced it the first
will
time.
You spell will you spell the word for me?
S... Chris, you know... There's a song by Unknown Henson I'm going to have to play for you sometime.
What is it called? I don't know what grammar is.
It's called Shut Up or I'll Throw You Out the Window. Mister, I speak German better than everyone else.
In this room, I do.
S-C-H-U-T. Shut.
Shoot.
Shoot. Z-S-T-A-F-F-E-L. Looks like your mouth in German.
Schutzaffel.
Shoot your mouth. Schutzaffel is exactly what I said. Exactly what I said. Schutzaffel officers escaped Germany and fled to South America. And this, did I not already say Klaus Barbie, the butcher of Lyon? They mention actually specifically here. Neil, do you want to go ahead and pronounce this one for me also? Producer extraordinaire and linguist in residence.
Well, spell it. I can't see your computer.
Neil Nikandrov.
That's not spelling.
That's not spelling. I was pronouncing, wasn't I?
Yeah.
Well, I can't profess to be as good at it as you are, but anyway, Neil Nikandrov observes with the Strategic Culture Foundation, okay, in his well-documented Hitler Survival Myth book from 1981, that Donald McHale identifies the earliest source of the myth of Hitler's escape to the Southern Hemisphere as the unexpected surrender of a German submarine in early July 1945 at Mar del Plata, Argentina. Several Buenos Aires newspapers, in defiance of Argentine Navy statements, said that rubber boats had been seen landing from it and other submarines spotted in the area as well. You know, similar urban legends, I believe, have also stemmed from Admiral Byrd's expeditions to the Southern Pole and the idea that he said that there were great dangers that could exist in the future and things like that. A number of cryptic statements that he made after his polar excursions. And a lot of people believed that what he was actually alluding to was that there were Nazi flying saucers sitting down there at a base on the South Pole. I think in terms of you know, the logistics and the reasonable interpretation of historical data, what Admiral Byrd was actually alluding to was probably the notion that when we look at the North and the South Pole, these are strategic defense outposts that could potentially provide, benefit in terms of wartime and conflicts they could provide strategic benefits to people should those locations be occupied and bases be built there, you know, for the, of course, you know, for the storage and even the launch of advanced aircraft and the like. And I think Admiral Byrd realized that the strategic defense potential that existed at the poles, and that was his the reason for his interest in those locations. When he talked about dangers associated with them, in all likelihood, we were dealing with the dangers associated with occupation by another country prior to U.S. or ally occupation and building of bases and the like at those locations. And nonetheless, these urban myths began to result from the statements gathered by Admiral Byrd and the like, you know, discussing, well, essentially what were believed to be Nazi bases at the North and South Pole and even the potential of advanced aircraft, saucer-shaped aircraft, or Nazi UFOs, if you will, at these locations. Much the same, this Before It's News article talks about how there were a number of reasons that there were beliefs held that the Nazis and even Hitler may have escaped to South America and such places following World War II. It's interesting nonetheless. And they write that had... What is this? Let's see here. They show a photograph of a brick wall of a Nazi complex from Patagonia. Let's see here. Had the book by Professor Hugo Fernandez Artusio, published in 1940, called Nazis in El Uruguay, been read, he would have discovered that there actually was a plan referring to German Antarctica, but that this was nothing but the term they'd used for the Patagonia that this information had been made public also in New York in 1939. So, anyway, bottom line is that this information, although there is some factual basis to it, has been, you know, kind of misconstrued. And, of course, I think that, you know, urban legends and you know, myth versus fact kind of comes into question. And what we end up with is, over time, not only confabulation, but people kind of exaggerate on actual history and a strange interpretation results thereof, in which we see the Germans not only, well, populating bases on the Arctic poles, but also attempting to escape. Now, clearly a few of them did. I don't think it's very likely that Hitler escaped from the Führer bunker following World War II, escaped from the Russians there at the end of the Second World War. But whatever the case, the legend lives on in popular speculation as to whether or not Hitler did indeed die when history books tell us that he did remains. It's fascinating stuff, nonetheless, even if we can't take it at face value, the sociocultural implications and the fascination that stems from people's belief that, well, maybe some of this lingering evil, the Axis powers, the Nazis, maybe something lived on. It's fascinating to me. And that, my friends, wraps up another edition of the Graylian Report. For another week, I have to leave you to your own devices. And on behalf of Chris Hayes, Matt Oakley, Dick Oakley, John Anderson, Holly, Stephen the Counting, and of course, the mouth of the South himself, Micah Hanks, yours truly. I bid you adieu. Thank you for listening. Stay strange as always, and we'll catch you next week.